Beat a Path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The level of dishonesty and fraud is shocking, as much as the inability of FEMA in an emergency to weed out the cheaters.
CBS News has learned that congressional investigators this week turned over 7,000 cases for possible prosecution because of this GAO investigation. Congress is working really hard to fix some basic holes. Most of this fraud occurred because FEMA had no system in place to even do basic checks.
CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson with the story tonight on the CBS Evening News. Thousands of people with their hands out who did not need the help.
The one that really takes the cake, there is a Texas man who has just been indicted because prosecutors say he applied for 18 different applications, got $36,000, and used it for a sex change operation.
The GAO itself requested emergency funds and got a check for more than $2,000. President Bush made a surprise, as in no one knew he was coming till he got there, visit to Baghdad. U.S. troops gave him a huge welcome, and Mr. Bush encouraged the new government of Iraq.
My message to the Iraqi people is this. Seize the moment. Seize this opportunity to develop a government of and by and for the people.
For their part, al-Qaeda put out a statement calling for death to the Crusaders and to Shiites. Next in Iraq, a crackdown is expected to disarm insurgents and militias in Baghdad. Members of Congress have been getting a top-level briefing today.
Members of Congress gathered for closed-door briefings from Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
We are there to complete the mission, and the Iraqi government intends to see it completed with success.
But Rhode Island Democratic Senator Jack Reed said he heard nothing new, and Democrat Joe Biden said the administration needs to be more honest.
Unless you level with the American people, you can't expect to get their support.
The Iraq war is being debated this week in both the House and Senate. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now, would you buy a car and give the bank the ability to disable it if you're late on payments?
The devices help customers make their payments on time, and in the event that they miss a payment and they've exceeded the grace period, it will make their car unable to be started.
Matt Yeager at AutoTrack, which sells a little device. If companies can unlock your car and tell police right where you are if you have a wreck, why not be able to just turn it off on a deadbeat? Technically, there is no impediment at all, as it turns out. More than 40% of electricity in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, went out suddenly. Turns out a mouse did it. The experts say the mouse, about the size of a human toe, caused a short circuit in the 40-megawatt power plant just south of the city. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 86 points to close at 10,706. The Nasdaq off nearly 19 points. And oil prices today down $1.80 to $68.56 a barrel. This is CBS News.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now, it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. See LN7806.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore. Erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
Months ago, the new chairman of the Federal Reserve gave the American family a pep talk. Now it's a pat on the back.
Despite many confusing choices, American families are handling their finances well, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says. Debt burdens are manageable, loan delinquency rates are low. But he warns there's a growing gap between rich and poor. In the poorest households,
almost 25% of those families were unbanked.
In other words, they have no dealings with banks. Only 40% own a home, just 10% have retirement accounts. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is in fair condition now after crashing his motorcycle.
He is awake, he's alert, he's oriented, and he is resting with his family at his side.
Dr. Larry Jones says Roethlisberger lost two teeth, has a broken jaw, broken nose, and a concussion. Should be out of the hospital later this week. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. See LN7806.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck. I know. Who's he? I'm the guy with a new show on Headline News at 9 Eastern and Pacific after Nancy Grace. Now, why would Headline News give me a show?
Maybe.
Because politically correct really isn't in my vocabulary. It's time somebody says what we're all thinking, from politics to pop culture. Every night, Headline News sets me loose. Not to save the world. Just to look for some common sense. Watch me, Glenn Beck, every night on Headline News at 9 Eastern and Pacific after Nancy Grace.
And good evening, good afternoon. We are live from Washington, D.C. This is the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. And we are here at the Take Back America Conference, which is at what they call the Reagan Hilton here in Washington.
The Hinckley Hilton.
And there is so much action going on here today. I have a report for you a little bit later on about some powerful speeches that came from Democratic elected people like Hillary Rodham Clinton, John Kerry, and Nancy Pelosi earlier today. And there's plenty to talk about. Later on the program, we'll be joined by Dan Carroll, a political strategist. Also, Captain Sholene Espinoza, former U-2 spy pilot, who has spoken out against a number of issues, will be joining us. Eric Bullard, who writes for Salon and is a media critic in many respects, he'll be joining us. David Sirota is a powerful voice on the left, and he's got a new book out called Hostile Takeover. And also on our program tonight, Glenn Greenwald, the blogger who has a now bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. That's all ahead. And once again, my co-host joins me, Angie Coiro, who is the voice of Mother Jones Radio. Angie, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be back, Peter. I'm getting used to this.
Yeah, nice to have you here.
Yeah.
And across the table from us is author and op-ed columnist. I enjoyed your work in the New York Times, Barbara Ehrenreich.
Hi, good to be with you.
Barbara, how's it going for you?
Well, it's always fun to come first to something like this, you know. It's just to see there's so many progressives, and this is just, of course, a tiny sample of them.
Yeah.
But also, you know what surprises me here? I've noticed so many elected officials today, state legislators, city council people. That's I don't know if that's new or what.
I think it's an indication of the growing power of the progressive movement. You saw a little bit of that in Yearly Kos last week, where before it used to be the bloggers, and when they put their first big annual event together, all of a sudden the powers that be realized they need to be present for this.
Yeah, so that seems to be happening.
Yeah.
Governors, all sorts of people here today.
Well, also organizations like Progressive Majority are working from the ground up to fatten the bench and the so-called farm team for Democratic candidates of the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very worthwhile effort, because we could use a little new blood, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. But this is also a pretty young gathering in many ways. Looks that way to me, but then everybody's looking young to me, so I don't know.
Barbara, in your book, Nickel and Dimed, you kind of went undercover. You assumed the role of a person who works for the minimum wage, and you lived that lifestyle. From every account I could tell, you didn't have a secret ATM or a sugar daddy who sent you 20s in the mail.
Now, wait a minute. You think she's going to admit that part on the air? I don't think so.
talk a little bit about the life in America for people who are living at or below the poverty line and struggling to work as costs continue to go up. The cost of health insurance and co-pays, the cost of gasoline. I mean, working families are being hit really hard right now at a time when the Republicans just keep talking about tax cuts for the rich.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you a lot, to talk about my experience very briefly. I wasn't really undercover, you know, actually, Peter. I just, with my own name, went out and sought whatever jobs I could get without a resume or anything. One of the kind of jobs where you fill out an application form, and that's about it. So I worked as a waitress and a hotel housekeeper and a maid with a cleaning service, a nursing home aide, and a Walmart associate, as they are called, and averaged $7 an hour, which is well above the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, which is $5.15 an hour. So, you know, hey, I wasn't doing bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, in fact, was above the poverty level for an individual on $7 an hour. So, theoretically, no problem, right? But I found it was really almost impossible, mostly because rents were so far beyond anything I expected. And I was always looking for, like, one room with a fridge and a microwave in it. You know, this and my standards were really low. But that, you know, was still too much. Rents, realistically, and I was not in places like San Francisco doing this, or New York, or Washington, but still you've got to count on like $500 or more, and that's not counting utilities. And that's one person's, you know, one room. So that was what did me. And there was I heard a speaker here today who was talking about being a young mother and working in what was initially a minimum wage job with her daughter, an infant daughter, and of course not being able to make it. You need two of those jobs. And if you have two of those jobs, then when do you see your child or children? And one of the most poignant things this woman said, I think her name was Julie Smith from Cleveland, was that, you know, if you leave your child or children at alone, because you have to work at night too, so you're leaving them alone, if you do that and say there was a fire or something and the firemen came and found your children alone, you could be charged with criminal negligence and lose those children. So this is really the choice that so many parents now have. Either you work two jobs, and that might mean three or four jobs for a couple, so that you can feed your children, or you take care of your children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're physically present when they need you. And that's not, you know, that's a real Sophie's choice.
You know, what's fascinating to me about this is that your book came out and got a great deal of notice and did some very good things about raising the profile of these living conditions, but it's was released into the face of the wave of pop culture that portrays all Americans as wealthy, all children as wanting and receiving an iPod. You know, there's not much visibility, sustained visibility, for people who are living at this level. And, of course, by the very nature of their plight, they're not in a position to organize politically and, you know, go out there and bang on doors and say we need to change for our lives economically. So they're neither capable of representing themselves nor are they representative media.
Well, that's a problem with the media, though. I mean, I have found this as a journalist writing about poverty for 25 years now or something, that it's not a subject that the mainstream media likes to touch. And one of the reasons has to do with the fact that magazines and newspapers are supported by advertising. Advertisers want to feel they're reaching affluent people, and editors often translate that into, well, we don't want these bummer subjects, you know, about poverty. We want, well, if you look at the New York Times, which is, face it, our best newspaper, but they do, there's one special section after another dining out on Wednesday, you know, escapes on Friday,
fashion
style on Thursday and Sunday, which is all either it's upper middle class or upper class, you know, in the way they're directed.
Right.
So this is the emphasis of the media for some practical reasons.
Well, and the business section all reads like Forbes now, which is, you know, all this kind of real positive spin about how great this company is and how dynamic the CEO is. And the number of labor writers in the country, well, it's almost reached a level of extinction. The papers don't cover organized labor. They kind of cover work. And occasionally they talk about labor movements and struggles with employers and that sort of thing. But the coverage of labor has been almost completely excised from our media.
Or, you know, we have a business section. We don't have a labor section in these newspapers.
Yeah.
And when they do touch on labor, which means people, right, it's often described simply as a commodity. It's an expense that companies have.
Right.
You know, this problem that they unfortunately can't outsource everybody yet.
Mm-hmm. Those darn GM workers have too much retirement.
Yeah.
And nobody's looking at
they're
what the CEO
caught.
Is getting paid.
And then nobody's thinking these are human beings. You know, and this can be true even up to rather quite high levels of them, you know, salaried employees.
Well, Barbara Ehrenreich, for me, one of the pivotal points of the last few years has been the United bankruptcy, where the judge permitted that company to just say, we really didn't mean it when we made commitments to you on your pensions. And now we're seeing General Motors offering buyouts to its entire manufacturing workforce, clearly so that they can replace them with cheaper workers who don't get as good of benefits. We're really racing to the bottom in this country in too many cases.
Can you imagine saying that to your credit card company? Oh, did I say I'd pay you? No, I did. You know, I'm sorry, but you know, I can't do that now.
Or you can imagine someone in the administration or management of a major company taking that as an answer. What do you mean you didn't mean to negotiate that with me? I'll take your butt to court.
Uh-huh. No, it's stunning, you know, but everything. And speaking of bankruptcy, of course, there was the bankruptcy bill went into effect last November, which makes it much harder for anybody to get a fresh start.
That was done in honor of Marie Antoinette, isn't that right?
Let them eat cake, Bill.
Well, Barbara, we have promised to release you because here at Radio Row, you've got another interview in just a minute or two. Barbara Ehrenreich, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I know your book, Nickel and Dime. Do you have a more recent book,
too,
right?
Yes, it's called Bait and Switch on the Feudal Pursuit of the American Dream, and it's about the white-collar workers.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you, Barbara Ehrenreich, for joining us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And we continue with Angie Coiro here. Angie, in our next segment, let's open up the phone lines because I'd like to get reaction from listeners on the news that Karl Rove has been passed over by prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald and apparently will not be indicted. That's at least the word coming from Rove's attorney, Robert Luskin. We also, I want to recap some of the speeches that I heard earlier today. Senator Clinton, Senator Kerry, and Leader Pelosi in the House of Representatives all gave different speeches and want to comment on those as we continue. Let's open up the phone lines. If you're listening, give us a call, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free from anywhere within the sound of all this cacophony at 888-579-2540. There goes John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO. 888-579-2540. We'll continue in a moment, live from Washington, D.C., on the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112.
712. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're originating live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. My co-host, Angie Coiro, with me here.
Hello.
And Angie, during the break, it's nice to have 4-minute commercial breaks here. I know in your line of work, coming out of public radio, you don't have that luxury. But during the break, I spotted Ambassador Joe Wilson just across the room here, and I sprinted over and said hello to him, invited him to come over, and he said, you know, Peter, ordinarily I would, but I have decided to make no comment for the at least this initial period regarding Karl Rove and the prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald's apparent decision. Now, we have not heard officially from Fitzgerald.
Right.
This is coming only from Robert Luskin, the attorney for Rove. I would certainly expect it to be true, but what we're trying to figure out is if there is a backstory here, because our colleague Jason Leopold from truthout.org has been contributing to our program over the last few months, and he reported that he has solid backup for his report, which is, I believe, the 17th of May, that Karl Rove had indeed been indicted.
Right.
And the indictments were sealed. What we don't know is what happened after that, and if, in fact, Luskin, on behalf of Rove, made some sort of a deal.
And there's certainly been no declaration of innocence or declaration of not guilty. We haven't heard that yet.
Right. Well, we're hearing that from Ken Melman and the spin meisters at the Republican National Committee.
Oh, well, yeah.
They're saying that the fact that he hasn't been charged is a declaration of innocence. And I think we have to properly say point that there was a leak. It was intentional. There was a group of people who were in on that. And if Karl Rove has been given a pass, then to me the next big enchilada is a guy named Dick Cheney.
Wow. Did you really think that's possible?
Well, keep in mind that Scooter Libby is the only one indicted so far.
Mm-hmm.
He was chief of staff to the vice president. He has submitted, as one of the documents in his pretrial discovery, an annotated version of a clipping from the New York Times of Ambassador Wilson's op-ed piece with Dick Cheney's longhand comments written on it. So he was, in my view, you know, the evidence shows he was at the center of damage control at the White House, and this was part of the so-called White House Iraq group. So I still am waiting to see all the facts come out, and I was, I have to say, a little surprised when I flipped on the tube this morning and heard the announcement that Rove apparently will not be charged.
You know what? I'll bet a big segment of the American population went, it figures. Rather than greeting it with surprise, they probably greeted it with cynicism.
Because?
Because this has been, to borrow a phrase from the Reagan era, a Teflon presidency. This is, they committed any number of outrages that their predecessors would or had been corrected on, caught on, sanctioned, in one case impeached.
Right.
And there has been no debt to pay. There's been no debt paid here at all. And it's just another link in the chain,
mm-hmm.
I think, for some people who've grown weary to hear that there's no indictment coming out this morning.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. If you'd like to talk with us, we have lines available at 831-899-5792 or toll-free at 888-579-2540. Now, I forced myself out of bed this morning to an early morning speech by Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. She's not my favorite. But I have to say that she connected with this progressive crowd on domestic issues, on bread and butter economics, on the environment, on many of the positive points of her husband's administration. But when it came to Iraq, she tried to kind of gloss over it and use what they call triangulation, in my view, where she made a couple of statements that progressives would agree with, such as that Bush has mismanaged this war, that it's his war, but she could not bring herself to admit that she was wrong in voting for the war, or even that she was misled by the intelligence. And contrast that with the amazing speech that John Kerry gave later in the morning, and he kind of got going with his usual long-windedness, and then he cut to the chase. He said, "Let me be blunt." He said, "I made a mistake. I was wrong to vote for the war. I was misled regarding the intelligence, and this war is a catastrophic mistake." And I turned to a colleague and said, "Yeah, that's the speech that he should have given in 2004 at the Grand Canyon when he said, oh, I wouldn't have done anything differently."
And apparently the speech that Hillary Clinton still can't bring herself to make, which makes me wonder if, is it that she's unwilling to backtrack or is it that she really believes what she's saying?
Well, she, to her credit, took a position that was very unpopular with this group, which was to say that she doesn't support a date of withdrawal of American forces from Iraq.
And what's her rationale?
That's risky, that it sends a signal that we'll get out and all you got to do is wait until after that date and, you know, you can have a free-for-all. But to his credit, Kerry, again, was very explicit. And he said that this week he will seek an up or down vote in the Senate on legislation prompting a specific withdrawal date from Iraq for United States forces. So the difference to me is night and day. And Senator Clinton appears to believe that she can, you know, hold this kind of center line and not admit any errors on the issue. And I think John Kerry is taking a very different approach, and to me that's a signal that he'll be a candidate in 2008.
Well, it comes down to we're in a mess, let's not change anything, to we're in a mess, let's change something.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It's that much of a breakdown. People here at the conference have been carrying around the 2500 pink number at the base of their IDs, and that was handed out by one woman who wants none of us to forget that we're now at the 2,500 tally for U.S. fatalities, countless numbers of Iraqi fatalities. I just don't think you can look at that and say, stay the course.
Yeah. Well, I think that John Murtha said it well as far back as last November, that the American people are out in front of their elected leaders on this critical issue.
You know, I think what has happened to Murtha with the right-wing talkers is evidence of how much they're still playing a game.
Yeah.
Many people are trying to think this through with all its nuance and subtlety and try to understand genuinely what to do, why. While the right-wing talkers are all saying, oh, well, Murtha, you know about him, blah, blah, right. Calling names, categorizing, and not even introducing the real topics.
That's Angie Coiro, and I'm Peter B. Collins. We're live from Washington, D.C. A quick break, and then we return here at the Take Back America Conference on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 AM from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Tom Hartman.
And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented them from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C., at the scene of the Take Back America Conference. I'm with my co-host Angie Coiro from Mother Jones Magazine, and we're joined by Dan Carroll, a longtime political activist, strategist, and guy who just can't say no to politics and action. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Good. Let me turn up your microphone a little bit so everybody can hear you. Let's see if that's a little better.
How's this?
Go ahead and lean into it because it's noisy here.
Better.
It is.
Dan has the whole convention room behind him with people walking back and forth and making noises, so
yeah.
Got to compete.
Now, I've been schmoozing all day, so my voice is probably going. What can I say?
Just before we went live, you asked if I still am in touch with Steve Pizzo.
Exactly.
And yes, indeed. He is blogging at newsforreal.com. Are you aware of that?
I get it every day, and he's still the world's angriest man and a great patriot and a taxpayer supporter.
And for people who don't know our mutual admiration, Steve Pizzo is a co-author of the book that exposed the savings and loan scandals of the 1980s called Inside Job. He went on to write a great piece for Mother Jones early on about George W. Bush and his wayward brothers, Neil and
Neil, the Sullivan days.
And so he's a great guy and continues to proliferate his opinions. Now, Dan Carroll, just before we went on the air, you talked about some of the things you're working on, and one is the idea of a Gore-Clinton ticket in 2008. Tell us about that.
Well, I think all of us here at the progressive movement, we want to win, we want to take back America, and the question of what's the best way to get there. And just to be provocative, did a posting on Huffington Post last week and launched a little campaign, GoreClinton08.com, with the basic notion, Republicans, they put their differences aside, they run their strongest ticket, they win, Gore and Clinton together, and I think Gore should be on top, politically speaking. And, he's talking potentially about running, Hillary is clearly running, and I think the two of them should work out their differences. I'm not sure why she doesn't like him, because he distanced himself more than Bill than she did back in the day. I really don't know. But
he's explicitly not talking about running. We're talking about
good
not
point.
Running.
There's a lot of draft talk.
Well, there's an exhibit over here, a booth of people who want to draft Gore.
Well, I think, the reality is I think progressives need to win and also win with principles. So we have somebody that the blogosphere and I think the grassroots likes with Gore. They hate Hillary. There's going to be a fight about this. And if they're running together, is there some je ne sais quoi?
Mm-hmm.
I'm throwing it out there. At the same time, possible backup plan that we've launched is BarackNow.com.
All right, let's come back to Obama. Right. Did you see Senator Clinton's speech here this morning?
I did, actually, yes.
And what did you think?
I was surprised she wasn't booed more. She was booed a little. I think her message in general on the economy was really strong. I think she talked about the need for programs. I think she did a pivot on the need for fiscal responsibility. And if we don't figure out how to pay for progressive programs, we're even more up the creek. I think she did a great job of that, actually. But I think still on the war, she's going to be litmus test on that in the Democratic primary. I think there's going to be a lot of bad feelings. And she's just in a pickle. She's not loved by the left, and she's assumed by the mainstream Republicans to be left. And that's a tough place to be in.
I gave kind of a similar commentary on her speech just a couple of minutes ago here, Dan, and what I did was contrast it with John Kerry's speech, where he admitted his mistake. He admitted that he was wrong to vote for the war and that he regrets it, that he was misled by the intelligence. And in sharp contrast to Clinton's comments, he said that this week he's going to push for an up or down vote to set a date for withdrawal from Iraq. She explicitly said she could not support that. So I thought that was a very interesting contrast. And what about Kerry? Do you think that he has additional shelf life?
And shelf life is the term. I mean, we're all like looking for sour cream in the back here.
I was thinking about the Twinkies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Gore gets in, he's toast. I think it's great that he's taking certain positions, but I really think, people were disappointed with the campaign he ran. I don't think he has a fresh story to go with your shelf life in particular. I mean, I guess he's got money, but I just don't see. I think he's a good man. I think it's a shame what they did to him. I think that, a lot of Democrats guess wrong on the first Gulf War vote, and as a result, they hedge their bet. on the second Gulf War under Bush too, and voted for it. And, you know, a lot of them guess wrong twice, and maybe the third time's a charm for Johnny Boy, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, it puts me in mind of the definition of insanity to do the same thing again and expect a different thing to happen at the end of that. And Kerry had the chance to show us what he would do under the full barrage from the other side. He failed. And I don't see any reason to expect that that barrage wouldn't be set to come again and that he would react any differently.
Right.
Okay, but we have two close call candidates here. We have Gore, who won the popular vote and lost in the Supreme Court. And we have Kerry, who came extremely close. And I believe the election was stolen in Ohio.
So, yeah, but I guess, at the end of the day, I mean, Ken Blackwell in Ohio said at 3 a.m., you know, it's going to take 10 days to figure this out. And then Kerry had 10 days of cover and then quit that morning. So that's a big strike for me on that. I mean, in Kerry's defense, you know, the whole campaign, you know, in early February, March that year, I think it was DNC chairman McAuliffe moved out without the Kerry campaign's knowledge and attacked Bush on AWOL. And I think, you know, they were planning to have, you know, his war record, Kerry's war record on the rebound if they dared attack. But in fact, you know, the attack was kind of ugly and they played that card too early and the Kerry people didn't even want to play the card then. So it was unfortunate. But he shouldn't have given up in Ohio, in my opinion. He had 10 days of cover from the Republican.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Well, you know, you'll have to deal in either way. No matter who we have on the ticket, you're going to have to deal with the fact that the Democratic Party is often in disarray. And if we look at what just happened in Ohio with Paul Hackett, they're no better arranged to manage the small campaigns,
right,
let alone the larger ones. I mean, they had a marvelous candidate there who could have been managed better, and they shot themselves in the foot.
But, you know, I wake up in the morning thinking about, like, what are the standards in campaigns, the reach issues like energy independence, health care, and other things that we can demand of all the candidates to reach. So, I mean, you know, we can do insider analysis and stuff, and if Mark Warner or any of these people step up and puts real principles out there, here's starting gate equality, here's internet access for all that kind of stuff, that's, you know, I think that's what the voters are looking for. That's what I'm looking for, too. But the reality is, I think right now, you know, a Gore-Clinton pairing, it's a pipe dream, I know. But GoreClinton08.com, I think, is something for if you want to win and you want to take power, perfect being the enemy of the good, I think that's the strongest thing we could field right now. It's not going to, I doubt it will happen, but if, you know, millions sign in, who knows?
We're talking with political activist and strategist Dan Carroll here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, you can join us toll-free at 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. Now, when we talk about fresh faces like Barack Obama, is he a little bit too fresh and not seasoned sufficiently?
You know, my view is, you know, I mean, John Kennedy was the last winning Democrat out of the Senate. I mean, I think every day he's in Washington, you know, it's like the flame of leadership that he showed in 04. It's like a little spritzer is happening on it. I just think then, you know, there's a need for leadership now, and I think I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait in line, and I think we're looking at a lot of generational change in our institutions and a lot of realignment, and waiting for permission from who makes no sense to me at this point.
This is perhaps a little politically incorrect, but can an African-American win in red states? Win even two red states that...
I guess I've thought about that, and people ask me about that. I mean, at the end of the day, that argument will be out there in 2012 and 2016, so I wouldn't like that. Why not go... Why not prove them right or wrong now?
What about a Gore Obama ticket?
I think that'd be great. I think that'd be great. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our theories probably will give way to the reality of the choices that are out there. And that's why I think it's, you know, I try to take my shots to try to urge the party to go in certain directions for the four people that listen to me. But maybe it's five. Thank you for your airtime. At the same time, I think how we put on the board real standards for progressive Democratic candidates or third-party candidates, I mean, there's going to be massive unmet public demand no matter who's running in 08 for, like, what else you got? You got Oprah, you got Tom Brokaw, you know, and so I think... Arnold can't run yet, but, you know, we saw with Wesley Clark, even with my little John Kuzak campaign, the ability to aggregate pledges and money online is massive. So,
John Kuzak campaign?
You don't remember it was a short-lived campaign to get him to run for president. We had 120 college campus chapters.
I would have signed on.
I know, he was hot. He shut it down when he didn't like the. It was kind of impinging on his bad movies that were coming out. He's in a slump. The guy's in a slump.
Dan, what's your sense about the midterm elections this fall? Any prospect that the Democrats could take back the House or possibly the Senate?
Yes, Peter, there is a prospect. I think there is. I'm hopeful that Democrats will run on from their heart and great ideas and basically call for change. The notion of, you know, our dear esteemed minority leader Nancy Pelosi and all of her friends standing on the steps of the Capitol and doing a contract with America, national democratic, here's what we're for, is a nightmare. I'm against that. I think we should run well locally. And remind people that in 94, 13% of American voters after Election Day knew what the contract with America was. They ran on change against Clinton. That's what we should run on now. We can put out a paper and claim a mandate on November 8th.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I think that attempting to mimic the Republicans will just seem like just that. However, how do we get some kind of sense out of, first of all, the national polls show that for the first time the public would approve of Democrats in almost every category, including national security and the war in Iraq. But when you translate that down to their elected representative, their senator, they don't really operate in the same way. And so we know that the country's on the wrong track and that voters believe that. How do we convert that into political success when we have gerrymandering, the power of incumbency, and all that money that the Republicans will throw? They just spent $5 million to hold that seat for Bill Bray in San Diego.
Well, you know, I'm hopeful that we can get, you know, one house back and get subpoena power. At the same time, I'm on the board of a group called Progressive Majority, which is trying to build a farm team of state and local candidates and taking the long view because there's no just add water solution that's out there, and we need to be running a bunch of these strategies at the same time.
What about the dismal reports that were coming after the primaries of last week? Or is it, what were the percentages that showed up at the polls?
28% in California.
Yeah, and apparently there we can't count on anger to generate votes.
Well, I mean, it's definitely, there's a group of, you know, that aren't tier one congressional races that we still need to put in play. And, you know, this is going to be a change election, and that message is out there for people. I think the case for change isn't necessarily, hi, I'm Peter, I'm a Democrat, and I believe in boom, boom, boom. But it's more like, hi, I'm Peter, I think we should be energy independent, I think we should do boom, boom, boom. And, oh, did I mention I'm a Democrat? Yeah. I mean, I think that little subtle change in how you market yourself is key.
We're going to continue in just a moment with Dan Carroll. We're going to go to the phones, too, so if you'd like to join us, call us at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 1-888-579-2540. With my co-host, Angie Coiro from Mother Jones, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show from the Take Back America Conference here in Washington, D.C. My co-host Angie Coiro's here from Mother Jones Radio. Dan Carroll is our guest, political activist, strategist, and what else?
All-around good guy.
He's a blogger.
A kumbaya, damn it, kind of guy.
Yeah. And Billy joins us from Capitola. Hello, Billy. You're on the air.
Hi. What's it like to be there? Is it exciting? What's the vibe?
It's just real noisy here, so you got to use all of your voice there, Billy.
Okay.
Now I can hear you. The vibe here is pretty good, but I think Senator Mike Gravel, who was on our show last night, pointed out that there's a lot of good energy here. It just depends how it is directed and whether we can, you know, see a kind of strength in numbers and a growth from here to November, because there are a lot of mechanical and institutional obstacles to be overcome.
I guess we all need to get excited about the same thing. And by that, I mean Obama.
So you're a BarackNow.com kind of guy.
Absolutely. And to suggest that he's not ready or he needs more seasoning is to misunderstand exactly what's needed right now in politics. A total shakeup. A person whose turn it isn't. And we need somebody we can be proud of. I would be excited to work for to put a black man in the presidency of America, to show the world what we're really like, to get rid of the stench of George Bush. We need to vote for something.
I know you would, Billy, and I would too. My concern is about a lot of the red states where there's still a lot of racism that is quite active.
And a lot of them will have their own quote-unquote reasons for not voting for him, but they will carry racism into the voting booth.
Dan,
you know what? They hate Hillary
just a second,
more
Billy.
Than
Billy, hold on. Go ahead, Dan.
You know, I think, he's done really well in southern Illinois, which has, half of Illinois is kind of a red state. I mean, I think he's got an aspirational leadership, very calm and very comfortable in his skin, whether black or white. I think that comfort in skill, in skin and likability factor in candidates, we tend to undervalue in picking them, although the caller is, I think, spot on here.
Go ahead,
Nobody
Billy.
Nobody is faking sincerity as well as Obama right now. He's so real. He's so exciting. That's exactly what we need. And Ron Wyden would be a great vice president.
Huh, that's interesting.
That's wacky.
Now, one of the knocks, at least from a progressive perspective on Obama, is that he is supporting Joe Lieberman for re-election in Connecticut. Went out to a fundraiser, gave a couple of speeches. And there is a buzz here about Ned Lamont. He's here, and he's going to give a speech tomorrow. He is the former cable TV executive who is funding largely a campaign against Joe Lieberman with his own fortune. And he does, I've interviewed him three times. I find him pretty impressive on the progressive track. And it suits my interest in seeing Mr. Lieberman and others who voted too often with the Republicans shown that there is a strong progressive Democratic faction that wants to say no to that. So I'd say that's the only negative that I have about Obama at the moment. Billy, go ahead.
I said, you must hate that what the Democratic Party is up to with Bob Casey in Pennsylvania and the like. I mean, the party is going in the wrong direction in those two cases, with Lieberman and in Pennsylvania.
Are we putting the cart before the horse here? Has Barack spoken about his availability to run for president?
No, this is a straight-up draft effort, BarackNow.com.
Has he said, I won't run? Has he said anything?
You know, I think he's, you know, indicated that, you know, he's likely to wait. But, I mean, the reality is, the holdup on all of this is no one wants to raise $100 million. It takes a long time to build that operation. But, you know, what people don't realize, I think the first primary this time is not going to be the Florida straw poll. It's not going to be Iowa or New Hampshire. It's going to be somebody's going to aggregate a lot of money and pledges online. And, you know, I think there will be, you know, whether it's BarackNow.com or other efforts, people will use these tools to try to say, sign in here, we can, and say to the candidate, yo, we've got money, so come on in.
Mm-hmm. Billy, thanks a lot for your call. Anything you want to add?
That was it. For Republicans, or the repugnant ones, as I like to call them, fear is how they motivate their base. That's not available to Democrats. We have to have passion, excitement, and positivity. Obama delivers.
Okay. Thank you, Billy.
I love this guy.
Oh, Billy does.
This guy. I want to run that guy.
Now to Susan in Santa Cruz. Susan, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Dan Carroll and my co-host, Angie Coiro.
Hi, folks. That's the second time I'm following Billy today.
Yeah, okay.
one thing, Peter, you need what's called a unidirectional microphone. We're hearing hard to hear you.
I do understand, and I apologize for that. We
Radio
cannot control
Shack
the maelstrom here.
Radio Shack has one for $10. You know, go to Radio Shack. Anyway, I just wanted to say, I'm not in agreement with Billy about Obama, because he did a bunch of things just got into the Senate, which were kind of telling about him as being kind of green and not really standing up. So I would prefer to have somebody in that is more of a known quantity and quality, actually.
And who would that be? Like Russ Feingold?
Well, I don't really know Russ that well, but yeah, he's a pretty stand-up guy. Even Gore, I mean, Gore has been becoming tremendous.
Well, I do tend to feel that Billy's on the right track in terms of new blood. I think that either Gore or Clinton or Kerry would produce a lot of flashbacks to previous campaigns and previous scandals. And I'd love to clear that slate and move forward with a new candidate. I really like Russ Feingold. I think he's taken strong and principled positions. But I don't think that the party leadership sees him as in their fold. Dan, what's your thought?
Well, this is a tough one. I mean, I think there's what to do about the war prospectively, and the litmus test of how people booted that or not. I mean, you know, the reality is anyone that's in the Senate, and that's part of the reason it's hard to get elected out of there. It's like, hey, Russ Feingold voted for John Ashcroft. So, I mean, I can smack him in a Democratic primary in an easy way. No one's perfect. My take is that he is a very principled guy, but in terms of, you know, how, I mean, like just the censure thing that he did a couple months ago, I didn't really understand it. It was like a one-man's picket charge across the field. He hadn't lined up people to support him. He might have had someone else take the stand in the Senate, one friend, and he could weigh in and not be seen as self-serving as an 08 guy right out of the blocks and give anyone an excuse not to take this seriously.
I agree that it was a political misstep, that he didn't count votes, didn't line up support, but I think he thought it was such an obvious slam dunk, the speeding ticket for, you know, this administration that had admitted they were going 120 in a school zone.
But part of it is, you know, we need to recognize as progressives, it's like, hey, if we say censure and impeachment, it may feel good and may get our base foamed up for a couple days, but until we have a House of Congress, that dog does not hunt. We cannot make the case. We don't have control of the committees. It's just not going to happen.
Well, that's not true of censure, Dan. Censure is a simple,
It should have been a slam dunk. It should have been a slam dunk.
Well, somebody, I mean, to me, it's like, I don't know what happened. I live 3,000 miles away from Washington now, but like, when you do something like that, you got to have a second act and the third act and people chiming in, and, you know, the lone wolf thing is fine, but you're not going to win a presidential campaign doing that, in my opinion.
Susan, thanks for your call today. Nice to talk with you. Angie?
I have to differ with you, Peter. I say you go with the winner, and while it's in dispute that Kerry may have won, Gore won. He did it all right. He could do it all right again.
I understand that, and I could support it. I'm only saying that, you know, ideally, I'd like to start fresh and leave some of that baggage behind.
I hear that. I'm, you know, ideally, an Oprah Tom Brokaw ticket would be great, but, you know, I'm taking one pipe dream at a time here.
Well, Dan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk with you. Good to see you in person. And Angie, thank you for co-hosting with me yesterday and today.
It's been fun.
All right. Very good. We're going to return in just a moment with more live from Washington, D.C. And I have lost my list, so I'm not exactly sure. But right after the top of the hour, another fine guest will join us here. And we will talk further about the events here at the Take Back America Conference. Live from Washington on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to tune in to the greatest reality radio show ever.
It's Sheila.
Not now, Kate. Not now. Saturday evening, 6 to 7, we'll have the most interesting people.
But Sheila.
What is it?
You didn't mention my name.
Kate. Of course, Kate. We love you, Kate. That's Kate and Sheila Gale every Saturday evening, 6 to 7.
On Reality Radio.
AM 540.
On KRXA.
Oh, good, Kate. You done real good.
Oh, thanks.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
President Bush pops up in Baghdad.
I've come to not only look you in the eye, I've also come to tell you that when America gives its word, it will keep its word.
Government auditors uncover massive Katrina fraud.
We're talking $1.4 billion on the conservative side.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. When President Bush excused himself last night, most of his guests assumed he was going to bed, but a waiting helicopter whisked him away from Camp David for an overnight flight to Baghdad. The visit was a surprise to Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki and, as CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer reports, to hundreds of hastily assembled U.S. troops.
Those soldiers were stunned to get a visit from their commander-in-chief.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States,
who congratulated them on a recent victory.
Our military will stay on the offense. We will continue to hunt down people like Mr. Zarqawi and bring them to justice so they cannot.
The President's visit was meant to bolster the Iraqi government on the eve of a huge security crackdown. 75,000 Iraqi security forces and coalition troops are being deployed in the biggest military operation here since the invasion itself in 2003.
On the flight back to Washington, Mr. Bush told reporters he wanted to assure Iraqi officials of U.S. support until they're ready to take the lead. A new embarrassment for the military. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv tells us it's a music video circulating on the Internet.
The song seems to be performed on stage at a military base by a Marine cheered on by others. It's about meeting a young Iraqi woman. By the end, there's a gun battle.
So I grabbed her little sister and put her in front of me.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, calling the lyrics racist and insulting, asked the military and Congress to investigate. The U.S. Marine Corps is condemning this Internet video as inappropriate and insensitive, adding there's no proof the singer's a Marine. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
Now this.
To increase driving pleasure for all motorists, the Michelin Man is on a door-to-door quest to collect signatures for a petition to build an American Autobahn. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn how the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series touring tires can give you the confidence to achieve driving bliss on any road you travel. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore, erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor. or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
Hurricane Katrina devastated the Gulf Coast, and in its aftermath, hundreds of millions of dollars were gone with the wind. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson has obtained a report from the Government Accountability Office to be released tomorrow. It shows the Federal Emergency Management Agency was easy prey for scam artists.
The scope of fraud that GAO investigators found is huge. They estimate between $600 million and $1.4 billion was made from FEMA to improper or potentially fraudulent clients. That means something like 25% of all the money FEMA paid out could have gone to people who are cheating taxpayers.
Hurricane Relief debit cards were used for a Caribbean vacation, football tickets, diamond jewelry, and Girls Gone Wild videos.
The one that really takes the cake, there is a Texas man who has just been indicted because prosecutors say he applied for 18 different applications, got $36,000, and used it for a sex change operation.
FEMA says it's already reforming its financial controls. Alberto never did become a hurricane. The tropical storm came ashore today, bringing heavy rain, but not much else from Florida's Gulf Coast to Georgia. Emergency management officials say it was a good rehearsal for what might come later in the season. The Pentagon reportedly has changed its mind about keeping some interrogation techniques secret by putting them in a classified section of the Army Field Manual. One official says descriptions of the techniques will either be made public or be eliminated. Karl Rove is said to be elated by the news from Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald has informed Rove that he will not be indicted in connection with the CIA leak investigation. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
This is Paul Hopkins, CEO of Farmers Insurance. As a national corporate partner supporting the March of Dimes, I want you to know about a silent health crisis in our country today. It's called premature birth, and it affects nearly 500,000 babies every year. That's 1 in 8 babies, and we don't know why this is happening. On Wednesday, June 14th, please join Farmers Insurance Be a Hero for Babies Day to help the March of Dimes stop premature births. It's our goal to make sure every baby gets the best start in life, so I'm personally challenging farmers, agents, and you, the public, to make a difference by raising $1 million in a single day. To show our commitment, farmers will match your donations up to $250,000. Be a hero by stopping by your local participating farmers agent office on June 14th or visiting www.marchofdimes.com/farmers. Farmers wants to bring babies back to where they belong, healthy and strong.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live from deep inside the Beltway, and there is life here in the swamp. We're in Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference, and a lot of great people are here. There's a real buzz and good energy. Joining me now is Captain Jolene Espinosa. She retired from the United States Air Force after becoming a U-2 pilot, and I know you're a marathon runner.
That's right.
What else is on the top of your resume, Jolene?
Well, most recently I've written a book titled Through the Eye of the Storm, and it is a memoir of sorts of my experiences as an Air Force Academy graduate, cadet, instructor pilot, and U-2 pilot, as you mentioned, and also as an embedded journalist in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
I'm currently a captain at United Airlines. But the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is get involved in this Katrina relief. My partner, Ellen Ratner, and I drove a U-Haul truck down to the Gulf Coast of Mississippi to deliver supplies and really fell in love with this community and seeing that really nothing much has changed in the last 9 months.
Yeah.
I've written this book, and all my proceeds from Through the Eye of the Storm will go to build a community center down there.
Oh, that's nice. That kind of activism and personal effort is something that we'd like to see more of. I mean, Walmart took some credit for sending truckloads of water and supplies to New Orleans. I'm happy to give them credit for it. It's nice when they do something good. But there were a lot of individuals who made that effort. I met a guy in San Francisco who told me that, because he has done pretty well in his career, that he made about $20,000 in personal loans to people in New Orleans that he'd never met.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, that's the biggest thing right now. well, two things. The volunteers are keeping these communities alive, and thousands are continuing to pour in there and do elbow grease type work. And the other problem is money, just like you said, is if you lose your equity in your home, most of us, that's where our equity is, and that's gone and insurance isn't paid, you've got to have a hand up from someone. And if it's not your government, it's going to be your fellow citizens.
Yeah. And Charlene, when you look at the tragedy in the Gulf and America's response to it, who do you blame and who do you think we need to hold accountable for the failures? I mean, Brownie got the axe.
Yes, well,
but hardly,
I mean, that was an easy kill. The problem, I think, honestly, Peter, is that I have a chapter in my book about government, if you will, and my brother is a consultant for businesses, and he has an expression. It says, politics is managing perception, and governing is managing reality. And I believe on both sides of the aisle, we've got a lot of managing of perceptions, and we don't have people that are going to actually govern and manage the reality of it. And the problem is what I've seen down with my own eyes is that there's really no one in charge. You look back in history, 1927, the great floods of 1927. Herbert Hoover at the time was the Secretary of Commerce, and President Coolidge appointed him to head up the disaster recovery. As a result of how well he did, he became President of the United States. Now, that's questionable president there, but he did a heck of a job.
Brownie.
when he was well, yeah.
Heck of a job, Hoover.
Yeah, heck of a job. A truly heck of a job. But we don't see that in the Gulf Coast. I mean, for one thing, the money is still sitting up here. I was just on Capitol Hill. I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I was trying to get an earmark for this past Christiane DeLille Community Center that I'm trying to build with this small community.
You didn't go to Dollar Bill Jefferson, did you?
Well, I was on the Republican side, I will say that, because that's where the money and power is.
Yeah.
But... And the fact of the matter is there's still a heck of a lot of money sitting here. We're 9 months out, and we're facing another potential storm season. Now, even if we don't get a hurricane there, and I'm not from there, but these FEMA trailers, and that's where everybody lives, 60-mile-an-hour wind, now we've got another disaster, more debris, as they say down there.
Yeah.
The answer is, I think, is you've got to empower the local leaders with capital and hold them accountable, and also that really ultimately we as citizens, our politicians, I like to say, are just barometers. They react to our pressure.
John Sweeney, the president of the AFL-CIO, is here at this event. I just saw him walk by a little while ago. And yesterday, the AFL-CIO announced a $1 billion investment in New Orleans. They're going to use their pension fund housing category or housing account to pump $1 billion into moderate cost housing, not condos for people who want to come to
not
see a football
Vegas.
Game at the Super Superdome, yeah. And so I think we are seeing what we call NGOs, non-governmental organizations, stepping up and saying, well, if the government's not going to do something, maybe we can.
Yes, and here's one thing. I was just at a meeting, and I met some Mississippi politicians, and they told me there's $7 billion, with a B, dollars in the pipeline for housing. Now, if we don't continue to put pressure and find out where that money is going and how they're going to distribute it, then it'll be business as usual. I mean, that's really what I fear. And I'm happy. Listen, I know that when I was disappointed, anger, bitter at what I saw with Katrina, I said, I have to act. It's a moral imperative. I appreciate that. But at the same time, Peter, they've got our tax dollars. And just like what I saw in Iraq as an embedded journalist, it is an abomination of gross fraud, waste, and abuse.
Well, and there are some parallels that, Katrina was a natural disaster, but we saw it coming. It wasn't, I live in earthquake country, and there is no advance notice for an earthquake, and we live with that. But, I was watching on TV for 4 days as Katrina first came in over Florida and then went back over the Gulf and came in there to Louisiana and Mississippi. And so some of this was preventable. And likewise with Iraq, anybody who had listened to George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father, and Brent Scowcroft, would have known how senseless it was to try to occupy Iraq. You could make a case of knocking off Saddam, in my opinion, but to take over the country and to link that to this phony war on terror, it just is so amazing to me that they can get away with this stuff and the American people sit still for it.
Well, I think you have a great point, and the other thing I would sort of piggyback on that with regard to Katrina and the similarities is that it's when you look at managing perceptions, just like President Bush, he's on his way back from Iraq right now. Okay, we don't have a strategy in Iraq, so let's just take a trip there.
You didn't hear? Dr. Peter Fever did market research. He announced the plan for victory. You don't have to actually have a plan.
Just
it's managing perceptions.
That's right. So he goes to Iraq because he doesn't have to come up with a plan for Iraq, or same way with Katrina. He goes to the French Quarter. He makes a beautiful speech. I think one of the most beautiful speeches I've heard him make in his period in mm-hmm. his administration. But yet it's, this is a campaign for humanity, not for power. And he's a master campaigner, but we've got to have leadership.
So let's shift to your period as an embedded journalist in Iraq. Now, as a military person, you probably had a kind of camaraderie with the soldiers you were embedded with, but I'm picking up that you have a very critical view of the war itself.
Yes, and I think the military in general, as we like to say, and I use the term we because I feel like they're still my family. That was my conduit to the American dream. They taught me how to fly. They gave me my education. We don't get to choose the wars that we fight. And in fact, the Marines are in, and also the Army. I mean, they're duty bound, obviously. But it was clear before the actual invasion order, as I was with the Marines in a Humvee, unarmored, in a tow missile platoon with a 19-22-year-old, that the Iraqis were embedding themselves in the civilian population. They were already beginning to lob mortars at us. Well, that made them believe that this is going to be like Vietnam, mm-hmm. when you can't see an enemy and you're fighting a 360-degree war zone. This is not good. We are, in a word, as they would say, screwed. And they really encouraged me to take that message back to America when I came back. And in the first really 48 hours, I was reporting on what I was seeing, which is that we're fighting an enemy you cannot see. This is a recipe for disaster.
Oh, and Charlene, I've heard so many first-person accounts of soldiers who are supposed to bust into a house and try to identify some sort of an enemy. And of course, we have multiple potential enemies. The U.S., the administration, focuses on Al-Qaeda. But the real conflict in Iraq is the Shia-Sunni crossfire, and we've stepped right in the middle of it. And our soldiers don't have the cultural or language skills to identify who is who. And, are we actually participating in ethnic cleansing at the bidding of one side or another?
Yes, and I think that's an excellent distinction, Peter, that a lot of people don't understand. And that's why if I was in charge and I was going to try to advocate anything, I would say get the U.S. troops off the Arab street. Get them off the street, just like in Colombia. You know, Congress has a law in Colombia whereby our troops are not funded to do anything except for train. If we're really going to stand up the Iraqi army, then we have to train them first. You know, and it's like one special ops guy had said to me in a training course, not related to Iraq, but I like to apply to that. There's three types of people in the world. There's sheep, or he calls them sheeple. There's mm-hmm. sheep dogs, and there are wolves. And in Iraq, the wolves look like sheep, and we are the sheep dogs that stand out like a sore thumb, and we have no clue what to do, essentially. So what you got to do, in my opinion, is you've got to train sheep dogs within the Iraqi population. The president talks about that, but there again, it's the same thing of standing up the Iraqi army. What was that mean? Well, we gave $500 million is missing to the Iraqi police. They're totally corrupt.
And they're infiltrated with various militias and religious groups. And again, we can't identify who's who. Charlene, we got to take a break and we'll return. My guest is Charlene Espinoza, a retired Air Force pilot, and she achieved the rank of captain. Now she flies for United. And she's with us for another segment. So if you have a question or comment, get on the line now. 831-899-5792 from the Central Coast. Or call me toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. 17 minutes past the hour. We'll continue in a moment, live from Washington, D.C. on the Peter B. Collins Show. your dentist listen to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
It's 420. Actually, it's 421. Let's check your traffic here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Here's Metro Diane.
We're going to start in the Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17 at Summit Road. Ports of a purse in the left-hand lane there. In San Juan Batista, Highway 129 at 101, we have a two-vehicle accident on the shoulder there. And in Boulder Creek, Bear Creek Road at Whalebone Gulch Road, reports of a fallen power cables across the roadway. So PG&E crews are en route for that. In Monterey, Del Monte Avenue between Sloat Avenue and Camino El Estero, some road work going on, so expect delays there. This report is brought to you by the California Lottery. It's a Tuesday, so don't just sit there. Go out and buy a Mega Millions ticket. Then watch tonight's drawing, Mega Millions from the California Lottery. Imagine what a buck can do. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Diane.
You're welcome.
I could paint a picture with a pen, but a song will only scratch the skin.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show live from Washington, D.C. here at the Take Back America Conference as we continue with Captain Sholene Espinoza. I misspoke. She was in the Air Force for 13 years but didn't actually retire, and she is now at United Airlines where she may never be able to retire because they've cut the pension funds. And she's laughing about it.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, she has a great attitude toward life. Let's go back to the situation in Iraq again. I was stunned today, and in a pleasant way, by the remarks of Senator John Kerry. Did you hear him speak in the morning session?
No, I did not.
Well, let me tell you what he said. He flatly declared that his vote in favor of the war was a mistake, that he was misled in terms of the intelligence information that was the basis for his vote. He referred to it as a tragic mistake. And he contrasted himself with Senator Clinton's comments, where she explicitly said she could not support a date of departure from Iraq. And Kerry says that he is going to put a bill before the Senate and ask for an up or down vote this week on a specific exit date from Iraq. So he is moving in, he's pivoting. He is acknowledging that he was wrong in 2004. And as I've said, I wish he had given that speech that I heard today back in 2004, because I believe it would have made the difference in that election. What's your take on the true status of the situation in Iraq? We kind of dance around the idea that it's in a state of civil war, but I think it is.
It is, I believe, and you talk to the troops that are still there or troops coming home, and I have friends from the Air Force that are in the green zone right now, and also the Marines that I was embedded with frequently talk about it. I mean, it's no, there's not genocide, but there's grudge killings, there's all types of different attacks, and the bottom line is...
bodies show up beheaded on the streets of Baghdad every day?
And here's the thing, you know, the Iraqis that I spent time with, they don't want to let their kids go anywhere alone. I mean, that's pretty much says it. When you think that you look at your child in the morning and you don't know if they're going to come back or not, that's, or, you know, your wife goes to go to a market. And my thing, Peter, is I'm very much someone who thinks it's not who's right, it's what's right. We have got to come together. We've got two extremes, pull out totally or stay the course. And there's got to be something in that. I believe that, you know, I flew missions, and I talk about in my book Through the Eye of the Storm over the former Yugoslavia, and I will never forget seeing those... basically, you know, the flashes of light, the indications that people are killing and being killed, and then landing and seeing the carnage and the really the civil war, mm-hmm. what that looks like. Now, what is our role in this? I mean, essentially, we can't deny the fact that it, as a nation, we all have this, bear some degree of this. We started this war, and there will be blood to their knees if we leave. But the question is, what is the role of the U.S. at this point, of the U.S. military? And I believe, as I indicated before, that you can't have U.S. troops embedded within the civilian population there. And I think that to set a date is more of a PR type of an issue, but really what it is, we have to see what are the measurable standards that we're going to do in terms of training. I mean, every type of business or any type of venture that you try to do, you've got to show your measurable standards, and mm-hmm. I think we've got to do that and empower the Iraqis. You know, one distinction I would also make is that, you know, we have spent more money trying Saddam Hussein than we have building schools in Iraq.
Yeah.
How do you win the hearts and minds that way?
Well, and the electric supply is not even back
same.
To pre-war
it
levels.
It was 4 hours when I was there in June, and my partner Ellen was just back there recently, and it's still 4 hours a day.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not making progress, but we want to create that perception. And clearly, the capture and killing of Zarqawi, actually the bombing, you know, is a marker. And Bush is trying to capitalize on that with the Camp David meetings and then his surprise trip to Iraq today. But I don't think that has legs, because we still, you know, we hit the 2,500 mark in terms of U.S. casualties. That carnage continues. And the daily reports of the you know, internecine killings in Iraq are not likely to change whether we stay or go.
Yes, and I think the other thing that you got to look at is in the case of what is it that we have done? Well, we've essentially given birth to a new generation of terrorists. Yes, al-Zarqawi, I mean, we're very hooked on heads, you know. We're very hooked on the President of the United States. He's a barometer. He reacts to our pressure, you know, like all of our other politicians. We're mm-hmm. very focused, or maybe we're not, on Osama bin Laden. We're focused on al-Zarqawi. But the fact is that we have given birth to a new generation of terrorists. And you go through
in the name of democracy at the point of a gun.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going to impose democracy on a country that has no history of it and talk about freedom and liberty, and these people can't even leave their homes safely.
Right. And so the question is, all right, well, what now? And the answer is, like I said, you've got to identify those sheepdogs, if you will, within the Iraqi population and empower them with education, opportunity, and investment. I was in Baghdad in June of 2003 in the Baghdad Convention Center, and I'm sitting there with a bunch of Iraqi contractors as they were told that they would only get half of the contracts. And the rest would go to Bechtel. And, oh, by the way, here's the website to do it. Well, there's no internet in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And they're scratching their heads. I mean, you know as well as I do, is if you have nothing to lose, you will behave accordingly.
Yeah.
And this is what we have in Iraq. And some of it is, like you said, sectarian, and some of it is terrorist, but a lot of it is out of desperation.
Mm-hmm. Well, Charlene, it's a real pleasure to meet you. Again, your book is called In the Eye of the Storm.
Through the Eye of the Storm.
And
Book of Hope, by the way.
Okay. And at our favorite online or independent bookstore?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Or in bookstores, like you said, or go to our website, throughtheeyeofthestorm.com.
Okay, and proceeds go to people in the affected area?
Yes, we're building one community center, and you can look at those plans on throughtheeyeofthestorm.com and follow our progress.
Charlene Espinosa, Captain, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
All right, and I'll see you on a future flight.
Absolutely.
All right, more coming up live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
A540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley with Talking Matters on KRXA 540 every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. We choose topics that touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. You've heard what Oprah said about using intention to change your life, how celebrities like George Clooney, Brad Pitt, and Angelina Jolie are spotlighting important global issues we need to care about. We've had programs on the great art of storytelling and how best to love your pets. Listen to all our shows archived on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. You can also download them to your favorite MP3 player. We love to bring you programs that are truly meaningful, subjects that keep you thinking, feeling, knowing, and growing. My books, Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway, can be found at Amazon.com. So keep listening. We'll keep talking. Don't miss my show, Joan Kenley's Talking Matters, every Saturday at 3.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just-renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
it's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B., live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. Coming up a little later, Eric Bollert is going to join us. He writes for Salon, and he's one of the people who has written very knowledgeably about the media landscape in this country and the incredible dominance that one company called Clear Channel has over the radio business. Eric Bollert coming up in about half an hour, and also next hour, a guy who's been frequently on our program by phone from Brazil, Glenn Greenwald, who has a powerful new book out called How Would a Patriot Act? Defending American Values from a President Run Amok. It is a surprise, instant New York Times bestseller, and Glenn will be with us just about an hour from now. Joining me now is Jim Schermbach. He is the co-producer of The Big Buy, this powerful new documentary. It's subtitled Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. Jim, nice to meet you face-to-face. We talked on the phone a few weeks back.
That's right. It's nice to meet you as well.
Yeah.
Finally.
And your film was executive produced by Robert Greenwald. Is that how that works?
Yes, and distributed by Brave New Films, Greenwald Company. Right?
He's done a great job of not only producing powerful content, as we call it now, but also in finding novel ways to get it in front of target audiences.
He basically invented a whole new genre of distribution for films like this, something that the right has been doing with their media for some time in how it's channeled, but Robert's doing it without any think tank help and without any corporate help and so on. He just did it himself, and it's turned out to be quite successful for him.
Yeah, yeah. Previous films have been partnered with Move On, and your film is kind of partnered with Common Cause.
Common Cause, Drive for Democracy, that whole thing, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Common Cause is sponsoring on June 27th a series of house party screenings of your DeLay doc.
That's right. It's Clean Money Day all across the country. We're using the documentary as an organizing tool to talk about public financing of campaigns. As I've been telling audiences here during the screenings, we're all involved in kind of our own causes and movements, whether it's the environment or women's causes or African-American causes or Latino causes or whatever it is.
About bald guys?
Yeah, that too.
Thanks.
And if we don't start addressing this fundamental problem of big amounts of corporate money actually controlling the agenda in this country, there's not going to be any room for any more debate on any of those things. We have to, as a progressive movement, come together and address this fundamental problem, which affects everything that we're doing right now.
So you have had the dubious honor of focusing very closely on Tom DeLay for several years now. Were you at all surprised at the way he conducted himself in his farewell comments on the floor of the House the other day? To have the chutzpah to take credit for the K Street Project when, well, frankly, all the indictments aren't in.
Listen, the guy is nothing if not consistent, right? I mean, he thinks it's a badge of honor. If you saw or read the speech, it's not the people who are the great compromisers that should be hailed. It's the partisan rabid dog types that actually are the heroes of the fight in his eyes. And no, I wasn't surprised. I mean, he's going out the same way he came in, which is as a completely bitter partisan kind of guy, and he thinks that's what moves things in this country, and those are the people that should be rewarded. And certainly his record shows that.
What's your sense of his legacy? For example, one of the things that he did was, in my view, corrupt the process of conference committees. He may not have done it single-handedly, but his fingerprints are all over it. And we've seen it repeatedly in the conference committee over the energy bill. At the very last minute, without any input from the earlier part of the process, Tom DeLay jammed in an extra $1 billion, most of which will be spent in Sugar Land, Texas, and much of it is going to Hallie Burton.
Well, and that energy bill passed by fewer than five votes, the five votes that he garnered here in his redistricting efforts in Texas. His legacy is just so many-fold. There's so many ways in which this Congress is reflective of him now, and the total corporatization of how it does business. I've been researching this issue for like 3 years now, and just the other day I learned something new, which was the Republican majority was choosing its chairmanships based on the amount of money they raise for the other colleagues in Congress, yeah. Not on seniority, not on expertise of the issues, but on how much cold cash they raise for their peers. That, to me, is a great example of Tom DeLay's legacy in a little way, really, when you're talking about public policy as a whole, but in the mechanics of how Congress works. There's just so many things like that that Tom DeLay leaves behind and that nobody wants to change.
Yeah. Well, and we have this situation just yesterday. Congresswoman Barbara Lee from Oakland was here, and we were chatting, and she is livid that a piece of legislation that she wrote in the House and that passed the Senate, I believe, close to unanimously, which is a ban on permanent bases in Iraq. And this has been attached to the supplemental authorization, the off-the-books funding, to continue the war in Iraq. And it was just deleted in the conference committee. And that's not how our process works.
No, you're wrong. That's how the process works these days,
okay.
With Tom DeLay.
It ain't supposed to be working that way.
The whole point of what DeLay has in mind is so that Democrats are completely marginalized, so that there is one-party rule, so there is no need for conference committees, there is no need to have a Democrat in the room, because this is all going to be decided by me and my captains and lieutenants, so that they don't have a role at all. That's exactly the way that Tom DeLay designed it, and it's still in effect, and that's part of his legacy, as well as all of these policy decisions that came down as a result of the five votes he more or less stole in Texas.
Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader in the House, was here today and gave a pretty powerful speech. And one of the things she commented on is she gave a forecast that if the Democrats win back control of the House in November and she becomes Speaker, that on the first day they're going to fix a few things, and in the first week they're going to fix a whole bunch of things. And in doing so, she enumerated that she does not want to go into payback mode, that she does not want to replicate this corrupt leadership of the Republicans, and she's calling for a civility even as she hammers the hammer. And I'm curious if you take that at face value and if you think politically it works, because, hey, we're in a hardball era, and if she is going to declare peace and an armistice, is that the right move in the face of this aggression that has been visited over the last, 12 years now?
Well, I guess I would answer that question with a question, and that is, if you're in a fight and you have your choice of Nancy Pelosi or Tom DeLay to side up with you, which one of those people would you choose? And I think even Democrats would be hard-pressed to choose Ms. Pelosi right now as the kind of fighter they want on their side. I don't know whether that plan will work or not. I'm color me skeptical about the Democrats and reform on this particular issue because...
Well, you come from the land of Jim Wright, and you got some kind of a memory.
Man, Jim Wright's sins these days look so so mild and innocent that it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
It is true. His book deal, you know, paled in comparison to Gingrich.
It's like tens of... I mean, it was a self-published book, I think, that brought in like $10,000-$20,000 or something like that. I mean,
well, the deal was he would go give a talk and he'd force people to buy his book as part of his payment for a speech.
Yeah, and boy, I would just take that over anything we've had in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's like an attack of poison ivy, isn't it? We're talking with Jim Schermbach. He is the co-producer, co-director.
Everything, co-everything.
Okay. Yeah, along with your colleague Mark Birnbaum.
Right.
And the film is The Big Buy, Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. Now let's take a minute to tell people how to get a copy. You were kind enough to give me a DVD, and I'm going to watch it and pass it around. Where can people go? Is there a website? Or?
As a matter of fact, there is.
I just had a hunch.
It's TomDeLayMovie.com. It's showing in about 20 or 25 theaters across the country right now. That we've actually had a larger theatrical demand than we thought we were going to. After he resigned, all of a sudden theater owners wanted to hear this story. And so people can catch it around the country as it makes their way. It's opening in Portland, for instance, this next week. It's opening in Denver this next week and so on. But you can order it right now at the website, TomDelay.movie.com. And especially you can sign up for these house parties on the 27th for Clean Money Day. It's really the kind of collective experience you should have with other folks of your ilk.
What about the other ilk? Bar. I've got a Republican neighbor, Hank. Do you think I could get Hank to sit still to watch this?
I think you should, because it's a film that I think tries to explain what happened to Tom DeLay, why he's in trouble, and why it affects the rest of the country. And those three things are what people outside the state of Texas, I think, want to know about. Just like people wanted to have a kind of post-mortem on the Enron collapse, people often these days want to know about the DeLay collapse and what happened and why. And this explains all of that. I think what's most interesting in the reaction to the film is we overlaid this story with a kind of film noir framing. It's got unusual lighting for a documentary and original music that's kind of noirish. And that, I think, has driven people crazy in a couple of instances. It's a completely fair doc. We have people criticizing Ronnie Earl, the Travis County DA, who's pursuing charges against DeLay.
Right.
And we have DeLay on for quite a few number of minutes defending himself. But it's the way that we do it, I think, for some reason that has driven some people crazy.
And who in particular? Because maybe that's a good thing.
Yes, it has been in a couple instances. But film critics in particular have been really hot or cold. They either get the concept or they don't.
Oh.
And I think without intending to necessarily, Mark and I have done this kind of doc that maybe people haven't seen before. And it's not a dry kind of expose on campaign finance. That's such a trivial way to express really what is called corruption and abuse of power.
Are there laughs?
We are a strong believer in humor, using lots of humor to tell a story, and also providing no kind of third voice or voice of God narration. So we just let, if people want to talk themselves into a hole, we let them.
I can't wait to see it. We're going to take a break and continue with Jim Schirmbach. He is the co-producer, co-director of The Big Buy, a new documentary, Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. And you can get more information at TomDelayMovie.com. If you have a question or comment, he's with us for another segment. You can get on the line now at 831-899-5792 or 888-579-2540, toll free. 44 minutes past the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Until they caught your little paw, your wage won't stretch. You're kicking up jets. A custodial sentence, you're not really avoided. Community service.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you personalities and interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and travel. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored by the Monterey Salinas Transit's Grapevine Express. The Grapevine Express runs weekends from the Aquarium to Carmel Valley. For more information, call toll-free 888-678-2781 or visit the web at mst.org.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
We're going. Tom Hartman.
And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented him from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
It's 447. Let's check traffic with Metro Diane.
Actually, not too much to tell you about. We have no new stalls or accidents for Monterey, Santa Cruz, Salinas. We do have some fallen power cables, though. Boulder Creek, Bear Creek Road at Whalebone Gulch Road, fallen power cables across the roadway there. So PG&E crews are on scene working on clearing that up. Checking the Santa Cruz Mounts, both directions of Highway 17, stalled, accident-free. Just some road work going on in Salinas. Davis Road between Westridge Parkway and Auto Center Circle. There's some maintenance work going on in the area as crews resurface the roadway. The southbound lanes are actually closed with traffic detoured to one northbound lane, so expect delays in the area. This report is brought to you by New Advil PM. Aches and pains keeping you up? Big news, New Advil PM is here. The multi-pain reliever, power of Advil plus a gentle sleep aid. New Advil PM, stop hurting and start sleeping. I'm Dio Traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. I'm glad you're listening. Things have quieted down here at Radio Row. We got the Young Turks down the way and a few other folks still lingering here. And if you'd like to call the program, you're welcome to do so. Jim Schirnbach is with us for another segment. And I'm going to ask him a little more about Tom DeLay and about the race to replace him. Some interesting maneuvers underway in Texas. Jim is the co-producer, co-director of this new documentary, The Big Buy, Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. Get more information at TomDelayMovie.com. And Common Cause is sponsoring these house parties on June 27th. It's Clean Money Day. And as you know, if you listen to our program, we're staunch supporters of public financing of campaigns. It's the only way to get that special interest money out and to shut down people like Tom DeLay, who basically traded legislation to lobbyists in exchange for campaign contributions. And it wasn't just rolls of quarters, was it, Jim?
Pay to play. Mm-hmm. Pay to play with millions of dollars in corporate money being funneled through lots of different pipelines.
Yeah. Now, do you have a big scoreboard or a whiteboard somewhere? Did you ever add up all the money that passed through Tom DeLay's grubby fingers?
You know, Mark and I have talked about this a couple of times, and we try to explain to people that the definitive DeLay movie is not going to be available for folks for like 5 or 10 years, you know, until all these investigations end and several books are written by ex-aides and so forth. There's just so many shell games going on and front groups and connections to Russian mobsters and Jack Abrahoff and all that stuff. We don't try to do to take an inventory of all that. It was just hard enough for us to take a slice of DeLayism. When at the height of his power, he came down to Texas again and yanked five more hard right-wing Republican congressmen out of our state against everybody's will except his.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just a case study of that abuse of power that he did in Texas and how that affects the rest of the country. That Texas was expected to be kind of a first run, a milk run, for this redistricting strategy. They wanted to take it to Georgia and Pennsylvania and Colorado and every state.
Well, there were ballot measures in Ohio and California last year.
Right, on how
on
to...
redistricting,
right,
mid,
on how
mid-cycle.
To, yes. And so they wanted to go in every state where the Republicans held a majority in the state legislature so they could do the exact same thing they did in Texas. And there's a warning at the end of the film from Ronnie Earl saying, if we don't stop it here in Texas, it's coming to a state near you.
Yeah, well, it certainly, and in some cases it already has. Now, Jim, can you explain, and I don't expect that you've ever been able to crawl into that funky little head of Tom DeLay, but what was it that caused him to run full tilt boogie in the primary and then decide to throw in the towel and say, you know, I'm going to resign in the middle of this election process?
Peter, what word comes to mind when you think of Tom DeLay? What base motivation? It's money.
Yeah.
It's money. It's all about money. He waited until the last possible minute to get out of his campaign so he could flip all of his campaign money into legal defense fund money. The film happens to be the last fundraising appeal that he did as a congressional candidate. He sent it out after he'd already knew that he was going to withdraw, and yet he cynically sent out this email that said, please help me stave off these Hollywood liberals, despite the fact that Mark and I are from Texas.
Right, yeah.
And I'm from heavily red West Texas, and he got about $60,000 in the last couple of days of his official campaign as a result of that email. Then, as you might have read recently, he also used the film again as a fundraising tool, this time officially for the defense fund by using Stephen Colbert's interview with Robert Greenwald.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And so they raised some more money off of us. And the reason he got out after the primary, he wanted to go out on a high note. He knew he was going to lose the election in November. They'd already been polling. He wanted to win one last election before he went. He also wanted to collect money, as much money as he possibly could under the guise of the campaign before he could flip it into the legal defense funds. And in doing so, though, he's really, really screwed up the local GOP process there. If he'd resigned before the primary, they could have had a vote and let people decide in the district. Right now, it's going to be an executive decision by the Republican State Committee there in Texas, and they are having a heck of a time trying to decide who to replace him with.
So there's nothing in Texas election law, for example, that would have moved the honor of the Republican nomination to the second place person?
No,
in the primary?
Not at all. Not in the rules. It's up to the... first of all, he had to leave the state and give up his residency officially, which he's done. He's now residing in Virginia.
Yeah,
and folks in Virginia,
let's warn all the pests in Virginia.
And
the exterminator has arrived.
So, he having fulfilled that, only now can they officially act. And then just the other day, I think on the 9th, the Texas Democratic Party filed an injunction against the whole process, saying he wasn't following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a temporary injunction now prohibiting the Republican Party in Texas from even appointing a successor to DeLay.
And so ultimately, what's your guess about how this will play out?
Well, the scuttlebutt on the street in Houston is that there's a current state rep by the name of Robert Talton, who's the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is Tom DeLay without the smarts, without the mechanical ability to govern. He's got all the ideological things to say that Tom did, but none of the street smarts that made Tom DeLay such a threat. This guy, for the longest time, would not let gay people in his state office because of fear of catching AIDS, for instance. That's just one thing.
Wow.
If you Google up Robert Talton and Texas, you'll find quite a record of...
he's leading the new age of enlightenment.
Oh, man. This guy is, as Jim Hightower says in our film, this guy is reform. You know, this is a reform candidate. It's going to be fun to watch. It's sad for those voters in the district that's who they're left with.
And does Talton have a lot of money? Is he wealthy?
No, not at all. And Nick Lampson starts out with a big head start.
That's the Democrat who won
Democrat
the
in the district, right.
Mm-hmm.
Who's had lots of name recognition. He was a former congressman in that area. People know him in that area, and he's got a big war chest right now.
And how much of the district is the area that Lampson used to serve?
A little bit in Galveston. It's made up of four counties, and one of those counties is a county that he used to represent. Ironically, when DeLay redistricted the state, he threw away some of his most ardent Republican districts to other folks that needed them in order to shore their numbers up. And he took a lot out of his home base of Sugar Land and Fort Bend County. So those people where he was based don't have as much say now in who succeeds him as they used to.
And what do you think Nick Lampson's prospects are? Of course, if he has no opponent...
pretty good at that point.
He gets to hold on to his campaign war chest or maybe give it to somebody else, and he just gets crowned.
Well, it's good. I think eventually this will all be worked out. There will be a Republican candidate, and that district is drawn very heavily Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it depends. Nick's been running a very smart campaign. It all depends on this expected wave of support that's maybe cresting in November. Everybody hopes at least to drive a lot of Democrats into office on the basis of maybe a new Latino vote, especially in Texas. Immigration issues very hot and so on. So it just depends. That district is more diverse than people give it credit for. A lot of Asian, South Asian folks are moving in, a lot of high-tech people. So it's not nearly as Republican as it used to be, but it's still drawn in order to give Tom DeLay a victory. It'll be tough for Lampson, even though he has lots of money and a head start.
Talking with Jim Schirmbach here on the Peter B. Collins Show. About 2 minutes remaining here, Jim. And the other person I'd like to focus on for a second is Chris Bell. He was a member of Congress. He got squeezed out in the DeLay remap. And his final step as a member of Congress was to kind of break the logjam, that truce that had been declared by both parties regarding the Ethics Committee. And he did file those charges that ultimately resulted in the reprimands to Tom DeLay. Was it three different
ones? Three or four.
Yeah.
admonishments.
Right. And now Bell is the Democratic nominee for governor up against Rick Perry and Scott McClellan's mom and Kinky Friedman.
Yeah, it's a...
You've got a real colorful race there.
It's starting to look like California politics, isn't it? It's gotten, it's gotten really crazy this year. We have a four-person race.
I'll trade you Arnold for Kinky any day. Any day.
Yeah, it's gotten really crazy. It's a four-person race, and the Dems believe that if they can hold their base, they can maybe win it. I don't know. There's a lot of controversy right now. A lot of people, the state Democratic Party is building itself back up from scratch, and it's not quite to the point where it was before. But he's doing a good job of at least holding on right now to his base.
Mm-hmm.
And if that can continue to November, it's anybody's guess as to whether he can win or not.
Yeah. What's it like to be a Democrat in the heart of red Texas?
You know, I'm not. You don't register for parties in Texas, and I have to confess that I voted in the Republican primary this last year because of a money issue.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy, a right-wing dentist in San Antonio, that was funding five races, completely self-sufficient. He cookie-cutter races. One of them was against a good guy in West Texas that is my representative that actually fought against Tom DeLay, a Republican.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to see this guy win and
What's
keep his seat. Delwyn Jones.
Delwyn Jones.
Older guy, been there forever, but fought against DeLay because it was bad for West Texas. And so I actually gave him my support this year in the primary, thinking he needed the help.
I like that strategery. Jim, great to talk with you. Nice to meet you in person. And Jim Schermbach is co-producer, co-director of The Big Buy, Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. Get more information at TomDeLayMovie.com. And Tom doesn't get any royalties for the use of his name on that URL. Jim, thanks.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Coming up next, Eric Bollert from Slate joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread. Try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with crumble stew. A side of couscous and a bite of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. FEMA was an easy mark after Hurricane Katrina. A government audit obtained by CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson shows massive fraud by people claiming to be storm victims.
One person collected $139,000 for damage to 13 separate properties. The only problem, he never lived at any of them. Another got aid for a rental and a hotel at the same time. The hotel was in Hawaii, and FEMA paid $8,000 for that.
Fraudulent claims could total $1.4 billion, nearly a quarter of all the money FEMA paid out. FEMA spokesman Michael Wadomski says they're already working on tighter controls.
FEMA reviews the performance of its systems, programs, and policies after every disaster to continually improve the effectiveness.
But he says the highest priority during a disaster is to get help quickly to those in desperate need. President Bush surprised just about everybody today.
Thought I'd stop in to say hello.
He stopped in to visit U.S. troops and Iraqi leaders in Baghdad. Mr. Bush made the dramatic secret trip to assure the new Iraqi government of U.S. support as a major military operation gets underway to restore security in the capital. CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer in Baghdad says security is the key to the future.
The United States allocated $18 billion to rebuild Iraq, but a quarter of that was eaten away by security costs, leaving the projects themselves unfinished. Insurgent attacks and organized crime have crippled the oil industry. And it's the same story with electricity. People in Baghdad now get 8 hours a day, if they're lucky.
The Marine Corps says it's looking into a music video posted on the internet. It shows a man, purportedly a Marine, playing guitar and singing a song about killing members of an Iraqi family. The audience cheers. A spokesman for Presidential Advisor Karl Rove says he's elated. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald has told Rove he's off the hook. He will not be indicted in the CIA leak case. CBS News political correspondent Gloria Borger says this changes the political equation for the fall elections.
It robs the Democrats of their poster child in the issue of Republican corruption in Washington. They've already lost Tom DeLay, who's left the Congress, and Karl Rove was another target of this corruption charge. And now, of course, he hasn't been indicted. And so I think what you're going to see is Democrats kind of backing away from the issue of corruption and focusing more on the question of troop withdrawals in Iraq.
Southern Baptists have elected a new leader.
Frank Page is seen as new blood, an outsider, a voice for the disenfranchised within the Southern Baptist Convention. The new president of the nation's largest Protestant denomination had the backing of younger Baptists who feel there's too little debate on things like doctrine and styles of worship.
CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula. The Dow lost 86 points today. This is CBS News.
This is Paul Hopkins, CEO of Farmers Insurance. As a national corporate partner supporting the March of Dimes, I want you to know about a silent health crisis in our country today. It's called premature birth, and it affects nearly 500,000 babies every year. That's 1 in 8 babies, and we don't know why this is happening. On Wednesday, June 14th, please join Farmers Insurance Be a Hero for Babies Day to help the March of Dimes stop premature births. It's our goal to make sure every baby gets the best start in life, so I'm personally challenging farmers, agents, and you, the public, to make a difference by raising $1 million in a single day. To show our commitment, farmers will match your donations up to $250,000. Be a hero by stopping by your local participating farmers agent office on June 14th or visiting www.marchofdimes.com/farmers. Farmers wants to bring babies back to where they belong, healthy and strong.
Every American city has some claim to fame, but now several cities can claim intellectual superiority. Heather Bosch of Station KIRO explains.
By looking at the latest census figures, BizJournals.com says it's figured out which U.S. cities are the smartest.
Seattle, San Francisco, and Austin are the three that have at least 40% of adults with bachelor's degrees, so that puts them really in a class by themselves.
And Projects editor Scott Thomas says the cities also boast low high school dropout rates. He says this means the cities are good places for businesses to find educated workers and for well-educated people to find good-paying jobs. Bottom line?
You just have more people who've got a really strong earning power.
Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
The way it works for Congress is members get an automatic cost-of-living pay raise unless they vote to stop it. Utah Democrat Jim Matheson tried, but he was quickly voted down. Representatives and senators get a 2% bump to $168,500 a year. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
To increase driving pleasure for all motorists, the Michelin Man is on a door-to-door quest to collect signatures for a petition to build an American Autobahn. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn how the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series touring tires can give you the confidence to achieve driving bliss on any road you travel. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore, erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues live from Washington, D.C. We're at the Take Back America conference. Coming up shortly, Glenn Greenwald, who has spoken with us by phone many times before, will be joining us. Right now, Eric Bollard is with us, and I misspoke earlier. He used to write for Salon.
Right, right.
And that was up until about a year ago. He's now got a new book out called Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. Must be about 900 pages, maybe 1,500.
True story. So I got the book deal a year ago. And I wanted to finish it by January, and I'd never written a book. Very nervous. The contract called for 80,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
And by January, I had 140,000 words.
Yeah.
I cut it down to 100,000, so I had to cut 40,000 words. It was just too much bad journalism document. And on the one hand, it's exhilarating if you're a writer and a researcher. On the other hand, if you're a citizen, it's nightmarish.
So what's your home like? Multiple TiVos?
No, you know, I'm not consumed. You know, I do good reading transcripts and things like that, and I try not to let it take over my life.
Most egregious example of the media's subservience to the Bush administration?
There are two chapters. Switchboat Veterans for Truth during the Kerry campaign, when the press absolutely refused to call out this hoax, the charade for what it was, which was just a hardball, dirty trick by the Republicans. I mean, eventually, after 3 or 4 weeks, they got around to the fact that none of the allegations made any sense whatsoever, and they had no documentation to prove it.
That was after they had mirrored the paid media campaign with hundreds of free plays of these hit commercials.
You know, the press sort of threw up its hands and said, you know, we have fog of war. We have no idea what John Kerry did, you know, in Vietnam. You know, some people knew what he did. The U.S. Navy knew what he did because it was all in the record.
Mm-hmm.
The other chapter that I think really distills pretty well is the Downing Street memo from a year ago when that was published in London May 1st. Senior high-level official memorandum to Tony Blair in the summer of 2002 explaining that the Bush White House had decided to go to war 8 months before. It was going to fix the intelligence, and they were going to use the UN to sort of entrap Saddam in a war, not in a way to avoid a war. That was printed in May 1st, 2005, and for the next month, essentially the American mainstream media refused to write a story.
The author of one of those memos was Sir David Manning, who is now the British ambassador to Washington. And I had a conversation with him across the table this close about 3 months before the Downing Street memos were published. And he was a nice man. We had a lovely conversation, but he was in full diplomatic talking mode and would not give an inch. And when the memos came out and I read that, it was interesting. I was trying to say, well, is that diplomacy or duplicity?
Yeah, oh, it's duplicity. I mean, the memos themselves are just blockbuster. I mean, it just peels away everything. I mean, every public appearance Bush made in the fall of 2002 was how he wanted to avoid war. And the press never called him out on it. And, you know, I opened the chapter a month after it was published in London. Tim Russert's hosting Meet the Press, and he's interviewing Ken Melman from the RNC. And they talk about Social Security and a whole litany of things. And he says, let's turn our attention to the now famous Downing Street memo. And that was the first time any employee in front of an NBC camera had uttered the words Downing Street memo on TV.
Yeah.
And yet Russert knew they were famous. I mean, everyone, the whole world was talking about him. It took a month for NBC News, not just Meet the Press, any outlet associated with NBC to mention the Downing Street memo. I mean, to me, that was just sort of a colossal failure. And it really, you know, this was 2005. This was not, you know, 4 months after 9/11.
Sure.
This was not 4 months after the invasion. This was after years had passed, and the press just refused to do its job.
Eric, my nomination would be the sequence of events regarding the flat-out lie of Dick Cheney. He was on Meet the Press. He made a statement, and it took The Daily Show to put side by side his comment and his false denial. And the next day, it was picked up by MSNBC. I saw it on that old Brian Williams newscast.
Right.
But they didn't do it on their own, and
no.
They owned the footage in question in both cases. It was Russert, and it was MSNBC, and they didn't bother to go to their archives until they were shamed into it by a fake news show.
By a comedy show. Yeah, how many people on staff in MSNBC and NBC compared to the Jon Stewart show, The Daily Show? I mean, it's
10 to 1, 20 to 1?
You know, they were so in lockstep with the White House. You know, the White House had, what was so interesting in the Downing Street memo, it was hard to pick who had less interest in looking back on the run-up to the war in terms of what went wrong and the lies we were told. It's like a neck and neck between the White House and the press.
Mm-hmm.
Because the White House absolutely duped the press, and it was a shameful period for the press. So Downing Street memo, the White House said, what? You know, what's that? And the press said, what? What's that? I mean, if it wasn't for talk radio and bloggers, that would have gone right down the memory hole.
Yeah. Remember Jessica Lynch and the Jessica Lynch package?
Yeah. I have a couple of chapters on the war because, I think like Bush will be remembered for the war, and the press during this time will forever be remembered for its handling of the war. It's interesting, I write in the book that I document the whole Jessica Lynch sort of charade. But it's interesting because that was born in the Beltway. It mm-hmm. wasn't embedded reporters who got duped. It was people back here so nervous about, you know, the right wing, the patriotism. They're the ones who essentially were fed that from the White House. They're the ones that blew it up from Page Washington Post's famous story. So it's interesting, you know, the bad journalism, even during the war, was produced in the Beltway. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. I give people who went to Iraq incredible amount of credit, whether they're embedded or whether they're still there. They essentially have gotten the story right for 3 years. It's the producers and the editors in the States mm-hmm. who are so nervous about this liberal media anti-patriotic charge. They're the ones that sort of scurry around and create these narratives.
It's only been a few days, but when the Zarqawi mm-hmm. kill was announced, I had a visceral reaction that this is a new Jessica Lynch package.
Oh, I think they've gotten better. I think they've stopped with the made-for-Sunday night movies. I mean, I think they're dealing in fact now. But
understood, but there are anomalies already surfacing in the timeline, who got there first,
right.
An Iraqi eyewitness claims he was
right.
kicked by U.S. soldiers before he expired, and so it just leads me, and part of it is I'm jaded.
Right.
I'm so cynical now
be?
After all the BS they've fed us
right.
that this comes down the pike, and it's certainly welcome news. I can't quite call it good news,
right.
And they are, you know, benefiting from that. But at the same time, my hackles and skeptic gland
get
very active.
Who would have thought we'd be, you know, have to indulge in these sort of conspiracy theories just because the press had laid down? I think what was interesting in the Zarqawi coverage in today with Bush going to Iraq, I mean, the cable news, I mean, it, again, lockstep with the White House. I mean, it's just glee. I mean, I'm not talking about Fox. It's interesting. My book, I don't really talk about Fox. I don't really care about Fox. They do what they do. Everyone knows what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in NBC and CBS and Time and Newsweek. And the true mainstream media. And the coverage of Bush in Iraq and Zarqawi was just like... I mean, you would think it had happened July 2003.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think we had just suffered through a three-year fiasco. And it's just the glee and the excitement and complete lack of context. And,
mm-hmm.
and they just want to cheer. They want to cheer real badly for this White House.
And no opportunity or inclination for self-examination by our media?
None. I mean, my book, we knew it was going to be a tough sell for the mainstream media. Very critical of them. It's not a name-calling book. It's not an Ann Coulter book. I mean, it's all very
So
factual.
You won't get on the Today Show?
I won't get on the Today Show. And she's going to
hey,
be
come
on,
the, on. Shave your legs.
She's going to be on the Tonight Show tomorrow night.
Really?
Yeah. So she's entertaining now.
Rhymes with Rich.
And you know, we knew it was going to be tough because
mm-hmm.
they hate self-criticism, you know, they hate criticism, and they hate serious criticism.
You know, I've talked to a number of correspondents who were at the correspondents' dinner when
yes.
Colbert
yeah.
did his act,
yeah.
and not one of them will admit that it was funny or even, you know, on-target satire.
You talk about a bubble. I mean, it doesn't get any more thick than that. I mean, you sit home and you watch that. You know, it's such an important point. It's not, the argument was not whether Colbert was funny in the room, or he was funny on TV. It was the fact that they refused to acknowledge what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, a year earlier, similar event, Bush was talking at one of these feel-good, you know, let's have some laughs, which is traditional and fine. He talks about, remember he talked about the WMDs, where are the WMDs? He did the shtick.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking under the curtains in the Oval Office, picture behind him. He's
right.
looking under the curtains. People are laughing. They're in stitches. The reporters think it's hysterical. It wasn't until some Democrats, and more importantly, some family members who lost sons and daughters in Iraq said, excuse me.
Tasteless.
That is tasteless. And so the press thought Bush making jokes about WMD was hysterical. They thought Stephen Colbert making jokes about them and about Bush was verboten.
Yeah.
So
the coverage, the New York Times, in its first pass, didn't even mention
he wasn't there.
The Colbert piece. They talked about the Bush impersonator.
Yeah, the sort of Rich Little's
yeah.
throwback impersonator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stunning.
So it's
and again, the blogs shamed the corporate media into covering that.
Again, Downing Street memo comparison. Well, they shamed him into Stephen Colbert, and what'd they say? Well, it wasn't funny. Oh, we knew he was there, it just wasn't funny. Downing Street memo, they shamed him to pay attention. And then they said, well, that's old news.
Yeah.
And it wasn't old news.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, everyone knew we were preparing to go to war in 2002. That's not what the memo said. The memo said, we're going to war in 2002.
Right. And the intelligence has been fixed around the policy. Eric, thanks for joining us. A pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to talk with you. Good luck with the book. It's called Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. And when I get a copy, I'd like to talk with you again after I've read it.
That'd be great.
Usually I do that first.
That's okay.
Eric Bollert with us. And coming up next, Glenn Greenwald will join us. We're live in Washington, D.C., where it's 16 minutes past the hour, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyer, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
It's 5:20, and here's Metro Dan with our traffic on the way back. Go, Metro.
We have an accident in Aptos, northbound Highway 1 at Soquel Drive. Two vehicles involved in this one. In Marina, southbound 1 before Reservation Run. Keep your eyes open for a ladder in one of the lanes there. Also in Marina, southbound Highway 1 at First Street. Reports of a stalled vehicle blocking one of the lanes there, so CHP en route to check out exactly which lane. And Pacheco Pass Highway 152 at Dinosaur Point, reports of a grass fire burning on both sides of the roadway, so be aware of that. Fire department is en route. And Santa Cruz Mountains, both directions of Highway 17, checking in, stalling, accident-free. This report is brought to you by your local Dodge dealer. Test drive any Dodge through June 18th and get four grandstand tickets to the June 24th race at Infineon. While there, ask about 0% or up to $5,000 cash allowance on select models. Hurry, tickets are limited. I'm dying with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you. When we're live on a remote like this, Matt Renner, our excellent producer in Monterey, comes on the headset when it's time for me to talk and says, "You're hot." And I always appreciate a compliment like that. We are live and hot, as they say, in Washington, D.C., here at the Take Back America Conference. And Glenn Greenwald will be joining us in just a few minutes. John Javna is here, and he has penned another book. This is your 94th book?
About 55th book.
55th, and it's 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Fight the Right. And this is out in soft cover right now, and you can pick it up at your local independent bookstore. I bet there's a website you can tell us about.
Indeed, there is. 50simplethings.com.
50 Simple Things.
Now, 50 what, with a numeral 50.
Okay, and what is it about, making lists and numbers? The Irving Wallace family put together the fabulous kind of encyclopedia books called the Books of Lists and went on for multiple volumes. Every time I look at Cosmo on the at the checkout, they got 18 ways to improve your lovemaking, 16 ways to figure out what he really wants. What is it about lists and numbers that help us process information?
Well, as politics in particular is a very complicated thing, a book like 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Fight the Right is specifically designed to make it possible for people to do something. Because it's very important that progressives do something now. And it's much easier to understand what possible things you can do when you break it down into little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And little pieces they are.
And so you put this together and you numbered them all up. And as people read the book and you get feedback, are you surprised at what they consider to be the gems?
No, I think we spent a year and a half picking out the various things that people can do. Things like, going to your library and taking a magazine out and putting it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because, librarians tell how popular a magazine is based on how many times they have to reshelve it.
Uh-huh.
Because it doesn't circulate. So if they think that people are reading progressive magazines, they'll renew their subscriptions, buy some more. That's a very simple thing. So all these things are distilled from the possibilities. And so we think that there's a pretty easy way to get involved with this.
I just flipped open to number 5 here. This is in 50 ways that you can, 50 simple things you can do to fight the right. And this is in sync with what you were just talking about, public offering. You talk about getting a subscription to Mother Jones or the Washington Monthly or Z,
right,
or some of the other progressive publications.
Right. You can take it a next step and get together with some friends of yours, and you can put up the $30 or whatever, $20 that it costs to get a progressive magazine for your local library.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what that does is that helps support the infrastructure that's delivering the progressive message to the public, and plus it makes it possible for people who otherwise might not get it to read it in the first place.
And you add the Progressive, In These Times, The Nation, one of my favorites, The American Prospect, Utney Reader. They do a great job of republishing articles from other places. All right, next, just I'm turning the page here to the Chicken Hawk Brigade. And
yeah.
This is a list of all the key Republicans in power today who never spent a day in a military uniform.
And the next page is about sign them up, about how you register people to vote. And the idea is, of course, registering is essential because most of the people who don't register would wind up voting progressive.
I'm sorry. I've got a real problem here. I could not countenance having Michael Savage or Bill O'Reilly signed up for the military. We have to have standards, John.
Well, they didn't. They didn't, but they talk like they did.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing is sign them up, and that's about registering people. And it suggests don't try to do registration en masse. Just pick one or two people and try to work with them to register them. Make sure that they're potential progressive voters. And there's a whole process by which you actually bring them all the way through to taking them to the polls or accompanying them to the polls, getting them to look over the voters' manuals.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know what they're doing. And
well, and we only had 28% turnout in the California primary recently, so maybe we do need to escort our friends to the polls to make sure that they actually get there.
I think that's a great idea.
Now I'm jumping ahead to Money Talks. This is item 7.
Right. That's now there's a group in based out of San Francisco called Buy Blue, buyblue.org.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend
We've had him
everyone.
On this program.
Oh, they're terrific.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of research into figuring out what companies are progressive and what companies are not.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, can I name some of them?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Well, for example, Costco gives all its money to Democrats. Walmart gives almost all its money to Republicans. They're very regressive. They're aggressively in support of voucher programs, which we as progressives don't support because we support the principle of public education. Costco, on the other hand, gives its employees good health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a choice between the two of them and you're using the progressive value system, mm-hmm. then Costco is the one.
Now, I flew here on a discount airline on JetBlue. Is JetBlue blue?
I don't know. You have to check buyblue.com.
I'll check that out. Okay, next I jumped here to the war on privacy. This is a very important issue to me regarding our security and the eavesdropping that the government's going been doing. 62.
Oh, it's page 62?
Yeah.
Okay.
Help you navigate your own book.
Well, the war on privacy, you know, there is, I don't know if you heard about this, there was a couple in Providence, Rhode Island that went to pay off their credit card bill.
I did hear about this. Yeah,
yeah. It's amazing. They went to pay the credit card bill, and they decided that it was too high. So mm-hmm. they paid off like $6,000. And they noticed that the check hadn't cleared. And then they called their bank and said, what happened? And they said, well, this is not what you normally do, so we can't let it process. We have to let it go through Homeland Security first. And they could not believe it. And they said, if this could happen to us, this could happen to anyone. And, of course, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's one of the – that's part of what we call why we fight. You know, interspersed among the 50 things is some good reasons why we need to do these 50 things. And this is an example of one of them.
Mm-hmm. And let's just pick one more here quickly. 24, talk to a politician. That's something that people can do. Do you recommend that we talk to like-minded politicians or those we need to persuade to our position?
Well, you know, starting with grade school, we're told that in a democracy, one thing you can do is actually talk to politicians, write to them, call their offices, or actually talk, confront them when they do town halls. And one thing that people should know is that they should go for their local office as opposed to sending things to Washington. If they're going to call, if they're going to write about their opinions about an issue, and that's any politician, they should go for the local office because if they send a letter to Washington, it probably won't get through mm-hmm. because of all the anthrax stuff. And they get too many calls in the offices in Washington. So that's one way to really make your voice heard because it will get reported.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, it's a real pleasure to meet you. The book is called 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Fight the Right. We've been talking with John Javna, and I had to come all the way to Washington to talk with you. You're based in Berkeley, California.
I was based in Berkeley, California. Now I'm in Ashland, Oregon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Place.
Well, it's good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next, Glenn Greenwald will join us here live from Washington, D.C. on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to the designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary, our 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com. Our corporate transportation program offers competitive rates, we answer the phone 24/7, and you get a real person. And we have the best professional chauffeurs. We cover all the airports, including San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, and Monterey. We can help plan your company's VIP meeting or employee outing to the ballgame. Let us take the worry and hassle out of your transportation or event. 625-5363 or MontereyLimos.com.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on live from Washington, D.C. We'll be live again tomorrow in our first hour. And then you're going to hear some of the interviews that we've recorded with great people here at the Take Back America Conference. That'll be during our second hour tomorrow. And then I believe producer Matt Renner will take over, and Larissa Alexandrovna will be with us to update us on her work for RawStory.com, in particular the issues related to Iran and other stories that she's been covering. Joining me now is Glenn Greenwald. Nice to meet you face-to-face, Glenn.
You too, Peter.
That's one of the real benefits of this event, is to get to meet folks like you who I've talked with over the phone and enjoyed your work. And now you have a bestseller, a book that, you started writing in March?
The last week of February. Took about 7 weeks from writing until the editing was complete, because we wanted to get it done quickly.
Yeah. And then it was actually published around the 1st of May?
It was offered for pre-ordering on Amazon around for the last week of April or so.
Uh-huh.
And then was in people's hands by May 15th or so.
Wow. And now you've made the New York Times bestseller list. Was that a surprise to you?
It was. The book went to number one on Amazon as a result of a lot of discussions by bloggers before it was even released, and mm-hmm. stayed there for a whole week. So we were hoping that would translate into an appearance on the Times bestseller list, because that's what really you need to gain visibility for the book and for the arguments. So mm-hmm. we were hoping it would, but we weren't sure. But it's now on there.
The thesis of How a Patriot Would Act is?
Well, there's a lot of scandals that have been discussed by the media sort of in isolation, one after the next, beginning with things like detentions of U.S. citizens without trials and the use of torture as an interrogation tool, and the fact that the government is eavesdropping on Americans without warrants in violation of the law. And while these scandals get attention in segmented fashion, they all share a common root that I think has received vastly insufficient attention, which is that this administration, in the wake of 9/11, adopted theories of power which hold that the president has the right to act without limitations or checks of any kind, including checks imposed by the law, and that theory of power really is the opposite of the founding principles of our country. And for that reason, we have a real crisis, a constitutional crisis that we face. And I think the national media has really failed in its responsibility to talk about those issues, and the book is an attempt to do that.
Mm-hmm. Just one example, Sibel Edmonds was here last night and joined us on the program. She's the translator who worked at the FBI, was fired and became a whistleblower, and in my view a very courageous person, not a native-born American, but somebody who understands our Constitution and what a true patriot means in this era. And it is stunning to me to see the way the state secret privilege has been imposed on her. And I learned from her that there is no legislation or legal basis for it. It is a common law practice that began with President Lincoln during the Civil War.
Right.
And this administration has used it 19 times now, and it's continuing to be used in trying to block the Electronic Frontier Foundation's lawsuits against the NSA spying and the telephone records data mining. And in that process, they have reclassified documents that were in the public domain, that were on websites. They have even claimed that Sybil Edmonds' birth date is classified. Mm-hmm. And she's gone into court hearings where she is allowed to present her case, and then she and her lawyers have to leave the courtroom as the government presents its case to the judge, and she cannot be present to face her accusers, which to me is a fundamental guarantee of our Constitution.
I mean, the state secret doctrine and what this administration is doing with it is an enormous threat to essentially everything. And I say that for this reason. There's actually several lawsuits that are pending alleging that the Bush administration is violating the law and the Constitution by, for example, engaging in warrantless eavesdropping. And they are invoking this doctrine, the state secret doctrine, to tell the judiciary that they have no authority or ability whatsoever to even look into the issue of these accusations, essentially that they are immunized from review by a court with respect to accusations of criminal wrongdoing, because to even look into these claims would jeopardize the important state secrets that the administration is keeping. And they've done things similar to the Edmonds case, where, for example, they write briefs and they tell the judge in Michigan, the federal judge, that if she wants to read the brief, because it's so classified, she would have to travel to Washington and read it in the Justice Department. And they make arguments all the time to the court that the plaintiffs in that case can't see. And you know, it's interesting, the administration constantly says that they have very solid legal authority for all of the behavior that they're engaging in, and yet they do everything possible, including exploiting these doctrines like state secret, to prevent the judiciary from ever adjudicating the legality of their conduct. And there's no point in having laws in this country if you block the courts from ruling about the legality of the government's behavior.
Glenn Greenwald is with us. His new book is How Would a Patriot Act? And you're a constitutional lawyer, and you started blogging, and this the whole author thing is kind of accidental?
The whole thing is accidental. In October of 2005, which is really only about 8 months ago or so, I began my blog with mm-hmm. the intent of talking about these issues.
Because I think we discovered you along about December or so.
Yeah,
somewhere in there.
Right around the time that the Times disclosed the existence of the warrantless eavesdropping program in mid-December, the blog really started to gain a lot of attention, because I was talking about the eavesdropping program in the context of these executive power theories and the dangerous threats that they presented to our constitutional principles. And that's how I was approached to write a book, with the intent of which was to take these arguments beyond just the blogosphere and try and force the national political discussion to start including an examination of how extremist this administration has become.
And in this accidental process, you've created a new publishing concern, Working Assets, the San Francisco-based cell phone, credit card, long-distance company that has a kind of positive social orientation. They have started a new publishing division with your title as the first one.
Right. What happened was they'd created a fellowship and they hired someone to start looking for voices in the blogosphere that they thought they could promote beyond the blogosphere. And that was how I was found by them. And the minute that we talked about the book, they immediately got behind it and wanted these arguments out there. And they created a publishing arm for the express purpose of publishing this book, and with the hope of enabling other voices to enter the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Now, help me out here, because you're a constitutional lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer, never played one on radio or TV.
Right.
What are our options here? The courts are packed with neocon appointees. The Congress, with you know, Republican majorities, is neutered. The president asserts that while he is not above the law, and Justice Alito said that he's not above the law, that essentially he can do whatever he wants. And he's acknowledged that at least elements of the NSA program that we know about so far, mm-hmm. and there is much more we don't know about.
Absolutely.
I know that to be a fact, but I am not privy to the specifics. So what options do we have as a people to push back on this unprecedented grab for power?
Well, the title of my book asks that question. It's How Would a Patriot Act? And it's geared toward the crisis that we have, which comes from, as you say,
the fact that all of the checks that the founders envisioned, the Congress, the court, and the media, have all fundamentally failed in their function in imposing checks on the abuses of power that have been engaged in by the administration. And so the question becomes, what can Americans do? And I believe that under our system of government, Americans always reserve the last check on government abuse. And I talk about the example of Watergate in the book, where President Nixon began as a wildly popular president. It took a full 2 years for the public to come to the conclusion that this was a serious threat, that there was real corruption in the government, and it was the American people who, changing their opinion, forced Richard Nixon to resign. And there have been other instances where, you know, the Republican Congress turned on the president on national security with the Dubai ports deal because Americans, for better or for worse, immediately opposed that deal overwhelmingly. And so my view is that the check will come once Americans realize how extremist and dangerous this administration is. And once the American people realize that, I believe that they will not tolerate the fact that we have a government that is the opposite of what America is supposed to be. And once that happens, checks will naturally follow. But the prerequisite is to convince our fellow citizens of the true gravity of the problem.
And given the political landscape, it appears to me that the people we need to convince are principled Republicans, if we can find some.
Well, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is the fact that the most eloquent and aggressive opposition to the administration's theories have come from highly principled conservatives like Bruce Fein and former Congressman Bob Barr and George Will and Grover Norquist, who, more than most Democrats even, have been running around trying to urge people to recognize that the theories of power that the administration has adopted and the behavior they're engaging in is true lawlessness, a real threat to the principles of our republic. And that's why the values that are under assault here, I think it's so important to underscore, are not liberal or conservative. I mean, the idea that the president is bound by the law and that we have a checks and balances in our system, or that Americans can't be imprisoned without charges being brought, these are not liberal or conservative ideas. These are core American values. And that's why I am optimistic about the ability to convince Americans to recognize the true nature of the problem.
Well, and I'm looking for signs of that awareness, and honestly, I'm not seeing it as I would hope. There seem to be too many people distracted and seeking distraction who don't want to confront these ugly issues and accept that, gosh, I have some responsibility in this.
Right. Well, I think there's, you know, some cause to be optimistic. I mean, the president had approval ratings in the high 70s and the mid-60s for the first 2.5 years of his administration, and he's now down into the low 30s or high 20s, which is almost Richard Nixon territory by the time he left office. So Americans have changed their minds about whether they trust and approve of the president in a fairly fundamental way, and he, as a result, is weakened significantly. But, you know, more than anything, I blame the media. I mean, the media has assigned the role in our government, in our system, of informing Americans about what the government is doing. I mean, the founders knew that people wouldn't be able to be political junkies and follow closely what the government is doing. That's the role of the media. And with regard to these issues, for example, you can barely find discussions of the radical theories of power that this administration has adopted in the national media. It just doesn't exist. And so the fact that Americans aren't fully informed of what the government is doing, I think, is the principal reason why they haven't reacted more aggressively. And that's why I wrote the book, with the hope of contributing to that process.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Glenn, it's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for writing this book. I think there's some powerful arguments here. I look forward to reading it. And when I have, I'd like to invite you back, and we can talk further about the issues you raise.
Absolutely. Always a great discussion. Great to be here. Thank you.
All right, good. Glenn Greenwald, the book, How Would a Patriot Act? Defending American Values from a President Run Amok. I'm live from Washington, D.C., 44 minutes past the hour. We'll continue in just a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We're not all bad. We put our features where they had to go.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to the designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience. I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
It's 547. Let's check traffic for the last time with Metro Diane.
Some good news for the earlier accident in Aptos. Southbound Highway 1 at Soquel Drive, that accident has been cleared. Pacheco Path, eastbound 152 at the Merced County line, a truck actually lost a load of boxes in the lanes there, which sparked a grass fire, so fire department is en route. Definitely watch out for some slow around there. Check on the Santa Cruz Mountains, both directions of Highway 17, solid accident free. There's some road work going on in Monterey. Del Monte Avenue between Sloat Avenue and Camino El Estero. Public work crews have begun a maintenance project, which includes resurfacing lanes and fixing storm drains. Might be a little delay in the area. This report is brought to you by Panasonic Digital Cameras. Every Panasonic Digital Camera features optical image stabilization, so you can capture spontaneity, not blurriness. See for yourself at Fry's Electronics Stores. Panasonic, ideas for life. I'm dying with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show as we originate from Washington, D.C., live again from this Hilton Hotel, known as the Reagan Hilton. It's where John Hinckley attempted to kill the president in 1981. And this is the scene of the Take Back America conference. A lot of great progressives have assembled here, and it's been a fascinating couple of days here. And there goes a phone on the floor. Bob Furtick, you're going to have to control yourself. You know, you come into a radio place like this and knock everything over, we're going to have to impeach you. Bob, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Go ahead and lean into the microphone and say hello to our listeners. Bob Furtick is the guy who brings us Democrats.com, ImpeachPack.com, and lots of other great activism.
My pleasure to be here with you this evening. What are you doing working so late?
Well, this is when my show is on. And if you wouldn't, you know, come in here and disrupt everything, we'd have a little more peace and quiet.
The world needs some changing, and we got to start by overturning telephones.
Yeah, well, you crack eggs to make omelets, and, you know, I appreciate what you do, Bob. How's it all going?
Everything's going great.
Yeah? Why don't you give us a quick update on impeachment resolutions around the country?
We're up to 10 state parties that have adopted impeachment resolutions. We almost got one through Texas, but the political bosses there managed to fend it off.
Mm-hmm.
We have
in California, it's still hold up in committee. The Speaker of the Assembly doesn't seem to be willing to take that on right now.
Well, that's in the state legislature. They could do a tremendous service for the country by bringing it directly to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And under the, you know, the Jefferson's rules.
Right.
We'll see what happens there. I think it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, listen, thanks for dropping in.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And Chris Williams is here. Chris is an activist from the East Bay and a guy who I first met in 2004. He was looking for ways to draw attention to the problems of the Republicans and the promise of the Democrats.
And it's just great to see you here, Chris. How's it going?
It's great to be here. That's going well.
So what have you been up to lately? The last email I got from you, you were throwing a big bash with Senator Barbara Boxer.
Yeah, we got involved with Senator Boxer's PAC. What we're doing is, you know, I run a PAC called Hammering the Issues, which does humorous get out the vote commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And we're involved in this coming midterm election, basically trying to get people who live in safe districts to work remotely, or sick, non-competitive districts to work remotely in districts that are competitive in California and across the country.
And so, for example, in California, because of gerrymandering and incumbent protection, basically most of the districts are safe. So what are you focusing on? What are the targets that you've identified?
In California, you know, 50 is an obvious one that people are looking at.
That's Busby and Bill Bray. Rerun in November.
Right, and, you know, we'll see what happens there again. But the 45 is actually not looking too bad with David Roth over there going against Bono.
Mm-hmm. That's district, Mary Bono. Sonny's widow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. District 4 and District 11 are
four
both.
Four is Doolittle.
Mm-hmm. And a guy named Charlie Brown.
Right.
Is vote running against him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
a veteran.
The
Pombo race in 11.
And Pombo in 11 with McNerney, who's now won the primary.
Uh-huh.
You know, so those are races that are in play if we can all get our acts together.
Mm-hmm. So I know District 11, it includes parts of the East Bay and then some key portions of San Joaquin County. Can you actually get people from Berkeley and Hayward to go all the way over the Altamont Pass and talk to people in Stockton?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's some people who will do that, and that, you know, can help us a bit. What I'm concerned with, though, is, you know, I looked at the primary numbers of who voted, and, you know, Republicans voted in twice the numbers of the Democrats. So one thing that I think we need to think about, and I don't even hear much discussion here about that in this conference, is we got to get out the vote more, and we got to reach across to the people who are disenfranchised and, you know, give them something to vote for.
What's your theory about why we only got a 28% turnout and it was more Republican than Democratic in the California primary?
Because there are a lot of people who aren't involved in politics because they're cynical about it. You know, they haven't seen much happen from politicians. And, you know, I'm hoping that progressive candidates can rise up and really stand for something, and you know, not be afraid to say what's on their mind and to speak truth to power, and then hopefully people will start responding. But you know, we're going to get a 60% turnout if we're lucky in the fall, and that's because, you know, we're usually voting for one white guy over another white guy.
Mm-hmm. Over in I guess it was District 36, Marcy Winograd took on Jane Harmon. And she scored well, not enough to win, but she got about 37% of the vote. And against an entrenched, PAC-funded incumbent, that, you know, is interesting. But I'm a little frustrated because I didn't really see any desire in California to look for fresh faces or to ask incumbents to move along, even ones like Jerry Lewis and Pombo and Doolittle, who are knee-deep in these pay-for-play scandals.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one place where I'm optimistic. You know, Progressive Majority has a pretty strong presence here. I love Progressive Majority, the stuff they're doing, trying to get candidates grassroots from the ground up so we can get these new faces you're talking about that aren't part of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's threatening the Democratic Party. I was at the yearly cost conference last week. Again, this threatening movement by the bloggers. But if the bloggers can reach out, you know, kind of group up with groups like Progressive Majority, make sure they learn from groups that are around that have been doing this for a while, I'm positive that, you know, we can get candidates who look different than they have in the past.
Well, you make a good point, and I'll just amplify it with this anecdote. This morning, I was here at this hotel as a small contingent from Code Pink was preparing to greet Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton as she arrived to speak. And the organizers of this event played Hide the Senator with the Code Pink people. And they kind of said, well, why don't you stand over there? And then they kind of raised questions about exactly how she was going to enter the hotel. And as you know, Code Pink is they have a strong message and they're clever in the way they deliver it, but they're not violent or, you know, in any way lawbreakers. and for a progressive event to deny some obviously, sincere and well-intentioned progressive people from expressing their point of view to a United States senator who's coming to speak here, that to me just sends the wrong message.
Exactly. It's an elitism that people feel. You know, that's a problem with the Democratic Party, is they're still trying to intellectualize things to people, and we all know what we feel, you know, and there are elites in this country, but most of us aren't. And so if the party starts talking to us in a way that is true to what they're feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, then I think that we can respond. And,
and the guy who just tripped over you as we were starting the segment, Bob Furtick,
right.
He to me represents the best of people who care about the Democratic Party enough to fight for it,
right.
instead of walking away, going green,
right.
or just checking
and
out.
And the bloggers are doing that, too.
Yeah.
The bloggers are doing that, too.
Well, there are a lot of great voices who are trying to engage, and as you point out, the leaders have taken a kind of elitist approach, and they choose, you know, when to talk to the rabble and, you know, the terms of that discussion. And I think we need a real, not a knockdown, drag-out fight, but a good old family scream fest, or, you know, a nice prolonged argument,
right.
to sort out the future of the Democratic Party and some sort of a unifying message. Bob Borisage, who organized this event, he's one of the founders of the Campaign for America's Future, last year published a 10-point manifesto that I believe all Democrats could embrace. It was specific enough to attract both progressives and centrists, and it was broad enough to avoid alienating people, you know, before you could get them in into the tent. And to me, that is the appropriate orientation, is to try to rally people right. around issues. You and I were talking off the air beforehand, and one of the things we see is that Democratic strategists are hoping to kind of sneak into power in November without having to promise substantive change
right.
or you know, true policy movements forward.
Right, right. And that would be unfortunate. You know, I think there are people here who are saying, yeah, November is really, really important. We really need to take this back. But there are a lot of people who are saying, it's not about this. It's about, I don't know if the Democratic Party has ever been a party of the people, because, you know, the institutions of this country are hard to battle. But we should argue that we should try and become the party of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and... You know, I understand that some of it was myth and some of it was perception management, but 15 years ago, and really before Clinton came in with the DLC cronies, I felt that the party more or less represented working people, members of labor unions.
Certainly more than death, yeah.
Yeah, and people who really, you know, fought the daily struggles of average Americans.
Yeah.
Chris, anything you'd like to add, just an impression of this event?
Again, I feel that it's an important event. I'm glad that everybody's here. There's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of great minds. As you said, there does seem to be a sliver of hope for internal debate, which is very encouraging. And I just hope also that we, again, reach out to the disenfranchised in the country and not just be part of the classes system.
Chris Williams, thanks for joining us. Good to see you here.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for tonight's broadcast from Washington, D.C. We'll be back at you tomorrow in our first hour. We'll be at the Center for American Progress here in Washington, hooking up with Faz Shakir and some of our other Progress Report buddies. Hope you'll tune in then. Peter B. Collins, live from Washington, D.C.
You're so helpless. Your girlfriend.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Tom Hartman. And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented him from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Hurricane Katrina was a massive storm, and a government audit being released tomorrow finds it was followed by massive fraud. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson has seen the Government Accountability Office report, which details up to $1.4 billion in bogus claims for relief.
GAO investigators applied for aid from FEMA just to see if they could get aid. And darned if they didn't. They have a check from FEMA issued to the GAO in the amount of $2,358. If it was that easy for the GAO investigators, they figured, yes, it was easy for a lot of other people that were trying to cheat the government.
Scam artists use FEMA-issued debit cards to pay for vacation trips, football tickets, adult entertainment, and a divorce lawyer. Reaction from FEMA spokesman Michael Wadomski.
FEMA's highest priority during a disaster is to get help quickly to those in desperate need of our assistance.
That said, Wadomski insists the agency is always trying to improve its fiscal controls. Even some members of the cabinet were surprised. Instead of showing up for a meeting at Camp David, President Bush appeared via satellite from Baghdad. CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer is there.
The president's visit was meant to bolster the Iraqi government on the eve of a huge security crackdown. 75,000 Iraqi security forces and coalition troops are being deployed in the biggest military operation here since the invasion itself in 2003. The aim is to make Baghdad safe again by taking control of areas riddled with violent crime and sectarian killings and neighborhoods where the police no longer dared to go.
The U.S. Senate race in Virginia is set now. Former Navy Secretary James Webb, who defected from the Republican Party over the war in Iraq, has won the Democratic nomination to challenge Republican Senator George Allen. Jerry Lewis is in the hospital. He's canceled plans to perform next month at the Orleans Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. Casino spokeswoman Candy Cazale says Lewis suffered a mild heart attack Sunday and has a touch of pneumonia.
Doing extremely well. The doctors are totally amazed at how well he has progressed over the last 48 hours.
Jerry Lewis is 80. He recently announced his return to live performances for the first time in 5 years and announced plans to bring a musical version of his film The Nutty Professor to Broadway. Congressman Patrick Kennedy entered rehab after crashing his